Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight, or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. And welcome to X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from western Idaho, just beneath the frozen White Mountains. It's February 15th, day after Valentine's Day. Those of you that forgot to wish your loved ones a happy Valentine's Day are automatically forgiven on this program. The solar wind tonight, 577.4 kilometers per second. Again, no sunspots. However, we are in the middle of a solar wind, in the middle of February, and if you look in the northern sky, you will see an aurora tonight. Beautiful, beautiful appearances lately. In space, no one can hear you scream, and no one can tell you where to park your satellite. If Tuesday night's orbital smash-up had occurred during the Cold War, it might have triggered a nuclear showdown. Instead, it has brought renewed calls for a celestial equivalent of the world's air traffic control system. Of the 6,000 satellites that we know of launched since the first Soviet Sputnik 52 years ago, few have been brought back to Earth. No international law requires it, and the process consumes rocket fuel that could otherwise be used to keep the satellites operational for longer use. Chinese government and freelance hackers are the primary culprits behind as many as several hundred daily attacks against U.S. government, electric utility, and financial computer networks, a senior congressman said. Sophisticated hackers could really wreak havoc on our financial systems if they were successful, House Homeland Security Committee Chairman Benny Thompson said in an interview. The threat is primarily from China. Sunspot 1012 is crackling with B-class solar flares. That was February 12th at 4:25 in the afternoon. One such eruption propelled a solar tsunami through the sun's lower atmosphere. An ultraviolet telescope aboard NASA's Stereo B spacecraft recorded the faint yet powerful wave. On Friday, that was Friday the 13th for those of you that missed it, around 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, people in central Kentucky heard loud booms, felt their houses shake, and some saw a fireball streaking through the sky. The nature of this event is still under investigation. Possibilities include a small asteroid or a piece of space junk entering Earth's atmosphere. National Weather Service reports that the fireball was debris from the February 10th collision of Iridium 33 and Cosmos 2251 satellites. It might be just a tad premature on that. We're not sure what it was. And if Galileo were alive today, the 445-year-old scientist would make very little progress on the problem of sunspots. This is a year of deep solar minimum. So far, 85% of the days in 2009 have brought blank suns, no sunspots, no flares, no great magnetic storms. In short, no way to celebrate Galileo's birthday. To the sunspots we hold our breath and the calm before the storm. Last week, we had a great program with Dr. Gary Schwartz. If you missed it, please go back and listen to that. He's the author of The God Experiments And back in December, we interviewed him on his book, The Afterlife Experiments. If you ever thought that psychology and interviews about the paranormal could be statistical and scientific, this is the interview. Both these interviews, you need to check them out. Join the archives at x2radio.com, or for those of you that are already signed up with us, x2-radio.com. Tonight, our guest is the author of The Alien Interviews, also several books on the Nephilim, The Return of the Nephilim. Our guest tonight is L.A. Marzulli. Welcome to the program. Well, I'm really excited. I read the book, The Alien Interviews. It's a compilation, but it also has a lot of firsthand information that you gathered in your personal life as far as your UFO and alien investigations, and I find that very refreshing. You know, the subject of UFOs is now not really a phenomenon. I think it's more of a culture now. And that being said, though, there are divisions within the culture. Some sort of non-believers within the believers, shall we say. Can you start us out by discussing the beginnings of the UFO culture? How did it start, really?
Just balls of light. There are some people have actually tied that into with perhaps that these balls of light are similar to what is making the crop circles.
Well, I think we lost the phone connection.
From the top.
Oh, there we go.
How's that?
Yeah, that's much better.
We okay? All right, I'll start
yes,
again.
We're fine. I can hear you fine now.
Okay, great.
Wonderful technical difficulties.
There you go.
No, it's not the government coming down on top of us trying to prevent us from letting the truth out.
In The Alien right. Interviews is really the offspring of my prior book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. And the reason why I wrote The Alien Interviews is because in doing lots of interviews for Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, I ran into people that were just completely skeptical. In other words, no matter what I would throw at them, they just wouldn't believe it. No matter how many witnesses, credible witnesses, how many stories, trace evidence, and all this, they just wouldn't believe it. In other words, they resorted to ad hominem attacks against me or the people that I was bringing forward and refused to really look at the evidence. This, of course, is very intellectually dishonest. But really, the whole, in my opinion, the UFO, the modern UFO phenomena, can be traced to 1945, where we see over the skies of Germany the Foo Fighters, and there's even a rock band called the Foo Fighters today. But the Foo Fighters were not disc craft; they were small balls of light which darted in and out of not only our planes, but the German planes, the Russian planes, the British planes. And everyone thought they were everybody else's. We thought, the Allied Command thought they were some sort of top secret, Nazi secret weapon type of thing that's being revealed at the end of the war. There were reports specifically in the place called Peenemünde in Germany, which is sort of like the German Area 51, if you will. A lot of top secret aircraft and missiles, and the V-1 came and the V-2 came from in and around that area, Peenemünde. So we know that the Germans, the Nazis, were definitely into rockets. My research has recorded that perhaps some of this so-called alien technology, disc technology, was actually being used. And all this is very colorful stories, not backed up by a lot of, hard, cold facts. And that's, unfortunately, that's just how it is with most of the, with ufology. So we have to, when we see a sighting, when we have some trace evidence, It's big time. But it really, in my opinion, goes back to 1945 with the appearance of these Foo Fighters. Shortly after that, in Roswell, New Mexico in 47, of course, we have what is now the legendary Roswell UFO crash that allegedly occurred in and around July 4th. In The Alien Interviews, I actually had Dr. Jesse Marcel Jr. come on the record, which is just a fascinating interview. And, of course, his father was Jesse Marcel Sr., who was the intelligence officer for the 509 bomb group stationed in Roswell, New Mexico, the only bomber group at the time that actually had nuclear weapons. And it's just a fascinating, fascinating interview. And, you know, the legend goes, and most of you listeners who have traveled in this is old information. What's interesting, though, is when we actually interviewed Dr. Jesse Marcel Jr., I was just riveted, just, you know, sucked in my breath almost, only because, you know, here's a kid, he was 11 years old at the time, who actually handled this stuff. I mean, his father brought in a box of the wreckage, and they took it out and spread it on the kitchen table, and Jesse Marcel Jr. actually handled the wreckage. And, of course, as we know, most of you know the story, so I'll make a quick thumbnail sketch. But later on, Dr. Jesse Marcel Sr., at the time, again, he's the intelligence officer, is ushered into a room, and the press is waiting for him. He was totally set up for this, by the way. He had no idea where he was going, with General Ramey. And on the floor was a bunch of parts from a weather balloon. And you can see the picture where Marcel was just kind of looking at the camera going, oh, my gosh, what's going on? And, of course, later on, decades later, Dr. Stan Friedman interviewed him, and that's, of course, has now become legend, where Marcel Sr. came forward and talked about the government cover-up, the Roswell crash really did happen. And, of course, corroborating his story, excuse me, just this year is Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who went on Kerrang Radio and blew everybody's mind when he was telling us that, yes, the extraterrestrial presence is real. The UFO crash in 1947 in Roswell did happen. The government, not only our government, but other governments are covering this up. I mean, that was just an absolute mind-blowing interview. So, really, from 45 to 47, we see the Foo Fighters, and then, of course, the Roswell crash, and then later on, Mr. Arnold in Washington sees those disc-like shapes which skipped over and looked like saucers, and hence the term flying saucers. And from there, the phenomena is really burgeoning. There's a site on my site, or there's a site, I should say, in my favorites that I go to and check out. And basically it has the number of sightings usually per year. So like in the 40s and stuff, there's maybe one or two sightings in 1941 or 42, and then it starts to go up. We get double digits and a little bit more. Well, when you hit 2008, we are getting triple digits, between 300 and 600 per month, not per year. So this leads me to my quote, which I'm constantly saying, constantly telling people, why we may disagree as to what the phenomena is. We can agree that the phenomena is real, it is burgeoning, and it is not going away. We need to sit down and talk about it and have dialogue and not ridicule.
Well, that's kind of what I was, you know, getting to in the beginning, was that, you know, here we have what we used to call a phenomenon, one or two every now and then. If you bring it up in any serious conversation with professionals, especially my astronomer friends, they will say, oh, we'll have none of that talk here. There's no such thing. You know, we look at the stars, but we don't believe in any of that garbage out there, and we're not going to have any of it in our planetarium tonight. It has now become a culture. It's now, you know, we're over 60% of the population of the U.S. that we know of has actually seen a UFO. Not just that they believe in it, but they've actually seen one. So, you know, this is getting like seeing cars on the freeway. It's like the skies are full of them, although they're not, you know, visible all the time, and we're going to cover a little bit of that tonight, too. So when you decided to get into the study of UFOs yourself, you decided to tool up with some very special training. Where did you start?
Well, I actually started with several books. One, the primer for me was a book by Dr. I.D.E. Thomas called The Omega Conspiracy. And he started writing, it's just an amazing book, really. He's one of the pioneers who studied ancient manuscripts and linked the present-day UFO phenomena with similar activities that were happening thousands of years ago. And, of course, his book talks about the Nephilim, which apparently were on the Earth thousands of years ago. He also references the first century historian Josephus, Flavius Josephus, who talks about the bones of the Nephilim being openly on display. He, of course, quotes the Book of Enoch, which is a pseudepigraphical book, meaning that it's written by someone else, but attributed to the author Enoch, which was also found, by the way, in the Dead Sea Scrolls. And when we start putting all this together, we realize that, first of all, there's a flood story in pretty much every culture on the planet. So why we may disagree, once again, whether the flood was local or regional or global, all cultures, including the Chumash Indians. I live out here in Southern California. The Chumash Indians have a flood story. It differs slightly than the typical one that we read with Noah and his sons and their wives, and but it's pretty much the same deal, that the flood waters covered the earth, and that someone built a boat, and a group of people got on the boat and with some of the animals, and they all escaped. I mean, this story is actually hidden in ancient Chinese writing, not the new glyphs that they have today, but the glyphs, let's say, that are about 100 years old before they became more modernized. They were more intricate, and in those Chinese glyphs is the entire story of not only the Genesis creation, but of the flood. Very fascinating stuff. And apparently missionaries who were over there at the time, when they began to decipher these glyphs so they could translate biblical text into the language of the Chinese, were blown away by these little pictographs and what they meant. The Chinese had no idea what they were looking at. In other words, the true meaning of the stories in these pictographs had been lost over the millennia. And yet, when the missionary asked, you know, what is this pictograph? And he said, oh, this is the word for flood. Man, boat, animal, water. Now, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but, you know, if you're a missionary 100 years ago or earlier, and you're in some Chinese village or whatever, and they've never heard this story before of the flood the missionary obviously knows, you know, your jaw's on the ground, because here's the Genesis story literally hidden in the Chinese language. So, I mean, I can make a real strong case that the flood was real, it was global, and it happened. And of course, all this traces back to the Nephilim. The Nephilim, different people have different opinions on it, and I'll weigh in and tell you what my opinion. The sons of God, which is talked about in Genesis 6, and I probably should just quote that real quick. The sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, desired them, and took as wives whoever they wished. And then, of course, the offspring of that is the Nephilim. There's other scholars that believe that, slightly different than I do, but basically what I think is that the sons of God are always B'nai Elohim, which is the Hebrew, which delineates them as angels. It doesn't differentiate between fallen or good, but for the purposes of our discussion, these are angels. They're the bad guys. They're fallen angels. When one reads the Book of Enoch, which I mentioned slightly earlier, we realize that these fallen angels, about 200 of them, descended on Mount Hermon. So it's sort of an amplification of the Genesis account. We get really an in-depth view as to what happened. They came sort of a quid pro quo in order to get access to the population, to the female population. They gave the men at that time the art of primitive weapon making and also other knowledge, which at that time apparently men did not have. Now, when we fast forward and we move to the modern age, what do we hear from ufologists? What is some of the mythos of ufology, which of course we really can't prove, but we hear it from people who come forward, and after a while we begin to realize that there's something behind the story. And that, again, it goes back to the quid pro quo, something for something, that apparently when we were first contacted by so-called extraterrestrials, they gave us technology for access to the population. Now, I'm not making that up. And what does that sound like to you? It does certainly mimics and mirrors exactly what we have in the Genesis and the Enochian account. So that's really where I began my research, was way back with the Nephilim and the Genesis 6, really back in antiquity, and then traced it to the modern day phenomena, and found out that there's some very interesting parallels between the account in antiquity and what we're seeing today, specifically regarding their vigorous breeding program. Remember, the union of the fallen angels and the women of earth were in fact in the Nephilim, the Nephilim. And what we're seeing today is very much the same thing through contactees and abductees, where people are being abducted, they are impregnated, and then usually at the third month, at the end of the first trimester, they're re-abducted, the fetus is taken. And what we're seeing is a very vigorous breeding program. Dr. Jacobs talks about that. He comes on the record in the Alien Interviews, gives a wonderful in-depth interview as to the abduction phenomena, what is happening there. And like myself, he believes that this is very nefarious, that there's that it's not good, that these entities, whatever they may be, do not have our best interest at heart. So all that to say, that's sort of how I began my research, and which led to three novels and two other books on it, and I'm working on a third, or I should say six.
That's really great and thorough, and it's a good overture for the 3 hours, because we're going to go into details of all that stuff tonight. And what I was noticing in your 30-minute history lesson that we've been doing here is that the culture of UFOs probably at least in our age may have started in the 1945s, and probably only because mass communication started about the same time. But when you mention ancient history, you know, the ancient Egyptians or the ancient Chinese or other cultures, even in art, in their architecture, in the carvings on their walls, and in their interactions, even in the Jews' history themselves, they caused their women to wear coverings over their head, not to prevent men from being attracted to them. No, it says in the scripture, lest the angels be tempted. And so we have them being called angels, gods, we have them being called, visitors from other world, Nephilim, shining ones, and we see their influence and their teachings always in small numbers, 9 or 10 or 200, not a big invasion force, just a kind of expeditionary force, and that's what we're kind of seeing. So we'll go into all that tonight, but what I was curious about was, although it's easy to pick up the books and it's easy to, vicariously pick up someone else's interview, you did a lot of interviews yourself, and you used the skill of hypnosis, which, not everybody possesses. So I'd like to kind of hear what you discovered with your personal interviews of people using that skill.
Well, I think you're confusing something with all due respect. I didn't hypnotize anyone, nor do I have that particular skill. I think you might be referring to Dr. Jacobs, who actually did regress many people. Yeah, Dr. Jacobs uses hypnotic regression. That can lead to a lot of false flags. And, as far as like buried memories, who is, are they real? Can we really count on them? So hypnosis is somewhat dubious. But what's interesting about both Jacobs and other people that I've interviewed is that there are enough people who remember this stuff without being hypnotized. In other words, one of the people that come on the record in the alien interviews, Karina Sables, remembers this stuff like it was yesterday. I mean, she doesn't need to be hypnotized to remember and to go back into her abduction experiences. Now, some of the early ones are clouded over. The ones that have happened later in life, she remembers very vividly in a waking state. This has been going on with Karina Sables since her early childhood. In other words, right, most people were thinking about Santa Claus and Christmas and having fun and playing with dolls or whatever. Karina is being abducted and being experimented on. Now, let me put it this way. For those of you, your listeners who are citing and believing that somehow this is a benevolent or a good phenomena or a good experience, this woman has literally been traumatized all of her life. She's fought to end the abduction experiences. So far, as far as I know, she has not been able to do so. She hates it, absolutely hates it, abhors it. This is, when you really strip it down and expose for what it is, kidnapping of a child and molesting that child is a crime in some states now, punishable by 25 years to life. So, this is not a picnic. And what these entities are doing, of course, is by our laws and really by any country that's ever existed pretty much would be a felon, would be a heinous crime in pretty much any culture. So, this is not a good thing.
Well, I want to go pretty well into depth in this in the third hour about the abductees and about the interaction between humans and what appear to be off-worlders or at least other races that are living on this world and what those motivations might be. So let's, the first couple of hours, let's see if we can lay some groundwork here. UFOs have been so popularized by directors and writers. I remember watching the movie Contact, and if you haven't seen the movie, it's a little different than the book, because in the book, Elle had this experience that was completely out of her belief system, but She was an explorer, most certainly hoping, you know, she was hoping to find an answer out there. And in the story, she finds a lot more than she bargained for. But in Carl Sagan's book with the same title, he mentioned not only the missing 18 hours of tape that they did in the movie, but the sand in her pockets and cuffs. Is there physical evidence for the existence of abductions, or do we just have these memory stories?
Well, again, I would point back to the alien interviews, a man that I interviewed by the name of Dr. Roger Lear. And this gentleman specifically, well, first of all, he's a podiatrist. He's also a surgeon. So he does surgery. And he was called in by, I guess, a friend, as the story goes, and asked to take a look and remove this particular object from this person. And when he was probed a little further, no pun intended, he was told that this person was an alleged abductee and that this was apparently an alien implant. Well, Mr. Lear promptly made a U-turn and walked out of the room. Didn't want anything to do with these people, thought they were absolutely crazy, whacked out. This guy is not, at least at the time, was not interested at all in UFOs or alien abductions or alien implants, and that's why he did a U-turn and left, thought these people were absolutely crazy. He was finally coerced by his friend to go back and at least look at the thing and take it out. Very, very reluctantly, he decides to do so. And so Dr. Lear is on the record, in the alien interviews, he talks about this. He goes in and figuring that this is just going to be some wire left over from a prior surgery or a screw that a pin or whatever that someone left in there accidentally. So he agrees to do the surgery and he goes in. And much to his surprise, he sees an anomalous object, which makes no sense to him, which kind of tilts him off of his worldview, off his paradigm. He sees that this object, unlike most objects that are foreign in the body tries to push them out. With this object, in fact, the nerve endings in the blood vessels had wrapped itself around it, and that there was some sort of a covering over the metallic object which could not be cut with surgical instruments. He found that very bizarre. And after some time, severing this object from the person, he put it in a little pill bottle, sent it off, and realized when the reports came back that this was an anomalous alloy, and they could not identify it, the metallurgy lab. So this made at least this man who had been a skeptic up to this point a believer that something was going on. And this is what's very interesting. He believes that the implant actually is powered somehow by the circulatory system, a nervous system and the circulatory system that's embedded in a human being. And that's how it, he believes it's some sort of like tracking device or homing device, which enables the so-called extraterrestrials to re-abduct that person. He talked to me about one operation that he did to remove an implant in which as his finger approached where the object was, this object literally would move away from him underneath the person's skin without touching the object. So in other words, let's say this object is in, I believe it was in the thigh, and as his finger would move towards the thigh, the object would bury itself and move, you know, down under the skin. I mean, that's freaky. That's completely unnatural. That's an anomalous situation. That's something that defies our laws on what we know of physics and science. It just makes no sense at all. And he was able to get that implant. And when I met him years ago, I was at a MUFON meeting in Los Angeles area, and I had gone down there to see Barry Chamish because Chamish had just come out with his book about the UFO encounters and the Nephilim, the reemergence of the Nephilim in Israel. And Chamish, of course, is a Israeli journalist and did a lot of research into this, discussed with the witnesses these 7 to 9 foot tall entities that they saw. He had photographed and again traces of landing. The sand was different on the beach where this craft hovered. It was different from the sand in other areas. And anyway, I went down to see Mr. Chamish and gave him my first book in my trilogy, Nephilim, and he kind of looked at it, and you know, we've been in contact with each other sort of loosely over the years and through email and stuff. But at that MUFON meeting, I met Dr. Lear there, and we got to talking about ufology and UFOs and the abduction phenomena and alien implants, and he sort of looked at me with this impish little grin and said, would you like to see one? And I said, what do you mean? And he goes, well, would you like to see an implant? And I immediately piqued my interest, and I said, I'd love to see one. He reaches into his coat pocket and pulls out a little pill bottle and just wiggles it in front of my face and kind of shakes it. And I go, you're kidding me. And he goes, no, you want to hold it? So I pull out my hand, and he pops the lid off, and in my hand I'm holding this little chip-like device sort of thing, this little anomalous piece of metal, and there it was. And since that time, he's done upwards of a dozen, perhaps more, of these so-called alien implants. And, of course, when people get these removed from them, it sort of validates the experience. In other words, they're not crazy. They're not losing their marbles. It's these experiences that they've gone through, and the reabductions and all this, it sort of validates it on one hand. On the other hand, it's like some people become even more terrified because they realize that, you know, I'm not dreaming, that this is really happening. And of course, that links back into Dr. Jacobs' work and with the abductees, and it also links into another man that I spoke to, Joe Jordan, who's really the only person I'm aware of that's had success with the abductees in stopping their abductions, which of course is sort of controversial. He was at the 2008 Roswell conference in Roswell, New Mexico.
Hold on, LA, before we get into that, okay. next one, we have a caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from.
How you doing? It's Ramon from New York.
Okay, welcome to the program.
My question is, maybe you can help me tie something in. It seems like we have a hidden history. As far as, like, here in the Americas, you have, like, a history pre-Columbus that's very rich, and supposedly we were, all these ancient civilizations were traveling all over the world and interacting with each other, and some of them have supposedly bases here. Little villages here from like Egypt and Roman, and to the phenomenon of the UFOs now, and how it just seems like anything that contradicts to the way we were supposed to believe our history and the way things are now.
You know, that's a really good question, a good observation. There's kind of a cycle of acceptance and denial of off-world presences on the earth. It seems ancient civilizations accepted them, either they made them gods or angels, but somehow they interacted with them on a mainstream level. But now, just as the caller is noting, we kind of reject all that. I mean, we are the intelligent beings on this planet, and we're not going to have it any other way, right?
Well, I mean, again, I would say I would almost disagree with that, and I'll tell you why. Because when you look at what the Raelians are saying, and the Raelians are a group of people who believe in their founder Rael, whose former race car driver Claude Vorlohorn, who was visited by small 4 to 5 foot extraterrestrial beings with the large almond-shaped black eyes, and given the name Rael, and told basically from these entities that had genetically engineered all life on planet Earth, that in ancient times they were regarded as gods, like you just mentioned, but now they were back to kind of set us straight at this critical time in human history. Of course, this is, in my opinion, is what the coming Great Deception is all about, which is the subtitle of the Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, the coming Great Deception, which I, of course, believe, which is why I wrote the book, that these guys are masters of deception. Jacques Vallée's book, Messengers of Deception, sort of puts that to the forefront. When I've talked to abductees and people that have been involved with these beings, either telepathically like Lynn Dickey did, it was actually involved with them for a number of years and had many encounters with these so-called entities, we begin to realize that they lie, and they lie incessantly. They can't be trusted. And
so, caller, do you think that's the reason why we have this hidden history, that somehow these off-worlders are working with the leaders of our world and have more or less expunged this rich history from the books?
That would actually fit in. I mean, I don't know what is it, Occam's razor?
Yeah.
There's nothing else seems to fit in. Like, why would you take that away from yourself? And unless you're trying to do something. So I've heard a lot about this upcoming deception, and it's really easy to do that. I mean, if we were to go back 500 years, how hard would it be for us three to do something like that with our modern technology? So for someone to be so advanced as them, it's not hard at all. And us as a general population, we're quite gullible. If you look at the news,
well, yeah, but we have, you know, lots of grants and lots of studious people out there that are digging through dirt all over the world looking for answers of the past. But when we find them, if it points somewhere other than where, you know, my third grade history book says man came from, it gets thrown right in the trash. We don't discover. We don't learn. We are sort of...
We call them,
you know,
crazy, and we lock them up. And,
yeah, there you go.
The other question I was going to ask you, what of the 6 to 7 foot Caucasian men that are found in places where they shouldn't be found in ancient times, like northern China and Washington State, I think Peru, where some of them had like the double sets of teeth, and they were,
right,
you know,
right,
they were giants for their time, because everybody's 4 foot five feet, and they're 6 to 7 feet.
That's a good question, Alan. Do we have an answer for that?
Can you repeat the last part of the question? He kind of died off at the end. I got the part about the conical heads, Peru, double sets of teeth.
He was saying
they tend to be 6 to 7 feet tall,
mm-hmm,
and I know they have mummies of them in Washington State. I don't know exactly where. Maybe Dr. Agnos has seen it. But the ancient Native Americans in that area talk about them and how they fought them off and how they, I don't know if they raped their women. They pretty much were at war with them most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Would these be the Nephilim that are spoken about in the Hebrew Bible?
Well, yeah, that's what I believe, and that's why, you know, you mentioned Occam's razor a little while ago, which is, you know, usually the simplest answer is the best. And in my, this is why I believe that what we're looking at is a coming great deception. It's, first of all, it ties in with the ancient records, specifically talking about the Nephilim, what they were, these apparently fallen angels who came to Earth, cohabited with the women, the offspring were this abomination called the Nephilim. And we also see that there's a reoccurrence of them later on, well after the flood, specifically in a book called Numbers 13. We see another reoccurrence of the Nephilim. But we also see the same type of thing happening over in the Americas, as you mentioned, specifically with these giant-like beings with a conical head, double rows of teeth, 6 digits on the hand and on the toes. And I've heard this from 2 or 3 different First Nation people, Native American people, where hundreds of years ago, before the white man came, the whole idea of when they would raise the hand, you know, which the movies have falsely documented as, you know, how, all that thing, you raise your hand and go, how, all that kind of nonsense. What it really was, according to these people, and remember, these are people that came to me with this information. I didn't go looking for it. And they told me that when a particular party of Indians, First Nation people, would be out, let's say, hunting, and they would see, let's say, across a small valley, another band, they would raise their hands and spread their fingers to show that they only had 5 digits. And if
so it was sort of like, how many fingers am I holding up?
Exactly. And if people on the other side of the valley or whatever did the same thing and they saw a 6-digit, then they would know that these, in fact, were the bad guys. According to my research, that the Nephilim were cannibalistic, which, you know, may or may not figure into the disappearance of the Anasazi, which was, you know, a tribe of First Nation people in and around the Americas that just suddenly vanished. I mean, who knows what happens? So these skeletons, these giant skeletons, are found all over the Americas, some with six digits, double rows of teeth, sometimes measuring over 9 feet in length, and with red hair. So they're certainly anomalous in the sense that they don't fit in with the so-called indigenous people of the Americas. It's really bizarre stuff.
Thank you very much. I'll keep listening offline.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for calling. You know, whenever I have discussions with people who argue against the presence of ETs or the Nephilim or intelligent design, I inevitably come down to this question. Let's start out and see where this goes. I ask them if Adam had a belly button. Yeah, I mean, that's a simple question, but you think about it. I mean, we know where the belly button is. It comes from the umbilical cord connected to the womb, the placenta. So, you know, the answer is an easy one, yes or no. So let's just say that Genesis is correct and Adam was made out of dirt and spit and the breath of God. Let's just say he had no belly button. He was a created being as an adult male. Boom, there you go. So now if you read further in Genesis, you see that Adam is on the earth in the Garden of Eden for a long time, a whole day, which could be a day, could be 1,000 years, could be 10,000 years. We don't really know the length of time. But at the end of that, they put him to sleep and take from his rib some information. Some say that they took a rib, and some people say they just accessed his rib, like the marrow in his bones or something, and created for him Eve. But they don't say that Eve was made as an adult woman. If you say that they took material from him in order to make a genetically compatible mate, then it means they cloned her, right?
Well, let me answer this by, you know, we're moving into a place where it's so speculative and no one really knows. And all that, you know, we can go back and forth and sort of argue that, and it's the type of thing where, okay, you know, this is what the story says, and it's sort of colorful, and there's no way of really knowing how all that happened, and no one was there, and we have no record of it, so we either believe it in faith or you don't, which is interesting. But there is a way that we can check. There is a way that we can see, but there's something operating outside our space-time continuum, and that is when we move into the world of prophecy. The moment we walk into the world of prophecy, we see, and I'm not talking Nostradamus here, that's, you know, four lines of very fuzzy information. I'm talking about prophecy, which is very, very specific as to what is going to happen well in advance of the future. And so when we travel in prophecy, we begin to see that some force, something is operating outside of our paradigm that we really don't know how it's working. But guess what? This prophecy is 100% true 100% of the time. And that's what I point people who pose me questions like with Adam and Eve and genetics and all this stuff, I point them to prophecy, because the prophecy is a way of proving that perhaps, again, it's still a walk of faith at some point, but the prophecy, once we walk through it and we know what it is and we see these things happening, the fulfillment of that prophecy in the modern era, it really begs the question to us, is this force that's dictating this prophecy somehow outside our time-space domain that can see well into the future and with pinpoint accuracy. The next question is, can we trust it? Is this force benevolent or malevolent? And if it's benevolent, has it left a record of itself? You know, and then, of course, that leads right down to back into Adam and Eve. And that's why I believe in, let's say, the Judeo-Christian mythos over anything else, because of that thread of prophecy which runs for thousands of years, in, you know, through different authors, 60 books, different people, no collusion between them, and yet we see this prophetic thread running for thousands of years into the modern era where we see prophecy being fulfilled. So when we start putting, you know, when I look at that, then I can go back and say, look, I don't understand the Adam and Eve deal, okay? Really don't get that. But I know enough about the difference between creationism and evolution. If Darwin had known about the deoxyribonucleic double helix, he probably would have rethought his theory completely. At that time, when Darwin was writing, you know, his theory about evolution, let's say, The cell to him was just this, that was it. He had no idea of DNA and how it worked. And what we see, in fact, and I'm getting off topic here with DNA, is that mutants, when we somehow injure that double helix and we get a mutant from that, it's usually not a good thing. It's usually a bad thing, which, of course, flies in the face of the evolutionary theory, which is what it is. It's a theory. It's not, never been proven that, you know, if the DNA is somehow tampered with or screwed around with, the results are not good, that they're exactly the opposite. So we see that the building blocks of life, which we have tapped into and we've mapped with the genome and we understand what it is, but Darwin wasn't privy to that and he didn't know. And what we do see is that we have very specific attributes in the DNA which create those particular, you know, whether it's a horse or a human being or, I mean, it's absolutely phenomenal. And in my opinion, that points to some sort of intelligent design. But again, when we move into prophecy, we see that puts everything off the charts. It puts the scientific community, because they can't measure it, they can't figure it out, they can only look at it and go, gee, this book was written 2,600 years ago, or, you know, 4,600 years ago, whatever, and yet we see those events which are written coming to fruition today. How can that be? How is that possible?
Well, you know, prophecy by its own definition is a conditional future. If you don't do this, then this is going to happen. If you don't straighten up and fly right, you know, your condemnation is going to come down upon you. But predictions, on the other hand, like in the last days, you know, the mountains will, the seas will heave themselves from their bounds and the stars will fall from heaven. That's a prediction. That's a little different. Nothing, apparently, that we can do is going to change that. But if you're talking about, you know, in the last days, you know, men's hearts will fail them and there'll be truce breakers and blah, 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 that's conditional because we can awaken. We can change that future. We can choose a different future path. Hence the reason why the books are given to us in the first place, so that we can change, we can grow, we can choose a different future. But I'm just speaking strictly anthropologically, you know. Let's take a modern example of this. China, decades ago, passed a policy limiting the number of females that were allowed in a Chinese family. Sounds good in order to, you know, limit their population growth, but this kind of put the males in a lurch because the government mistakenly assumed that men would grow up and happily go through life without a mate. But that's not what happened at all. They began moving out into Tibet, Nepal, India, and other countries looking for mates. And Tibet, specifically, has been decimated by the Chinese influx. Their commerce, their industrial development, and even their genetics are being changed by the presence of Chinese males breeding with Tibetan females. Now, if that can happen in a few decades on Earth, doesn't this add support for the argument that races on other worlds would do the same thing if a compatible race could be found on another world?
Well, you know, you're trying to get to point B, let's say, from A, and you know, you can make that link, and it's a what if. I need to go back and address something. That prophecy is you know, you talked about predictions. And I think we're kind of, maybe I just want to nail this down because semantics are being what they are. To me, prophecy is very specific. It tells exactly what is going to happen, and there is no choice. In other words, someone has gone into the future and called out exactly what is going to happen. For instance, the rebirth of Israel is a prophecy which is written thousands of years ago, and yet we see in 1948 Israel becomes a nation. It's regathered from the four corners of the earth. This even after the horrors of the Holocaust in Germany and the horrors of World War II. So people can say, well, that's self-fulfilling and all this. I mean, I can talk for hours about the fact that any other nation, any other culture who have been taken from their ancient homeland and dispersed into a more domineering culture, within two generations, 60, 80 years, they've lost all cultural identity, which is what we've seen when we examine the historical record. So prophecy is very, very specific and tells us not predictions, not something that might happen, prophecy is telling us what will happen. In other words, and there's no way around it. I mean, this thing will be at some point fulfilled because that person has jumped into the future. Remember, time. Einstein has shown us this, that time is just a property. It's just the dynamic that we happen to live in, and we move through it linearly in a linear fashion. But if there is something outside the space-time domain that can somehow jump and see all points, let's say, simultaneously, to us, of course, that would be incredible. To this particular entity, it's just how that entity is made. That's just the way it functions. He functions, let's say, for the purpose of our discussion. So prophecy is something very specific that will happen. And that's why I kind of hang my hat on the Judeo-Christian scriptures. Now, having said that, moving to someone trying to replenish themselves, this is an argument that I actually deal with in the Nephilim trilogy, that this so-called race of extraterrestrials are here to replenish their DNA because somehow it's been broken down and all that. Well, that's interesting, and it's certainly food for thought, and it certainly is a scenario. But that's not what we hear from certain abductees. And it's certainly, in my opinion, if they were going to do that, why not do it openly? Why all this nefarious abduction phenomena, which creates just incredible fear in the people that are going through it? Why is everything done in secret? I mean, surely you could just take a bunch of people without anybody knowing them and go off world and just do it. But there's another dynamic here, and that dynamic is one of fear. And this, of course, ties into my theory, which is why, back to Occam's razor, the simplest answer is usually the correct one. When we go back and we look at what the fallen angels did in the Genesis account and the Enochian account, when we trace that into the modern day abduction phenomena, we see that fear is the currency here. And it's done very deliberately. When we tie in the cattle mutilation, same thing. If you're going to take a cow and, you know, core out its anus or whatever, or eyeball, or strip the flesh from the jaw, dispose of the thing. Why drop it deliberately back into the farmer's field? Because it creates fear. And these beings, the currency of these beings, they move in fear. I mean, just one more point. When we move to the Mothman, which is, we can get into that later if you want, but the Quick Thumbnail Sketches was an entity that was unfortunately named the Mothman, which is a total misnomer. But this entity appeared to one of the persons that I interviewed in the Alien interview book, Lawrence Gray. And Lawrence Gray describes this thing as having wings, dark, like bat-like wings, that drop down its back, and some sort of like a robe, like one-piece robe deal. And the thing manifested in his bedroom at 2:30 in the morning. He describes it in one word, wickedness. Wickedness. He was paralyzed with fear. Completely paralyzed with fear. Couldn't move. As many people who saw this entity in and around Point Pleasant in 1967 had the same reaction. Terrified of this thing. Overwhelmed with fear. Again, fear is the currency of these entities, and that's how they travel. Now, Lawrence Gray was able to use what I would consider spiritual principles and was able to overcome this entity by saying something which might sound really bizarre to your listeners, by actually saying the blood of Jesus. This man was a Christian, was a born-again Christian, but it wasn't just some magical saying. He knew what he was talking about. He knew that goes back into the whole crucifixion, resurrection, all that, which we celebrate in this country, by the way, and it was Christmas and then at Easter several months later. But there's something so incredibly dynamic when one says the blood of Jesus. And he did that, and he talks about this entity fading away as he began to say that, just fading away, moving into another dimension. But fear is the currency of these beings. They move in it, they thrive on it, they create it.
I absolutely want to delve into that a little bit more. We are out of time for the first hour. If you'll let us take, let's take about a 3-minute break. We'll do some commercials, and we'll come back with more. L.A. Marzulli, author of The Alien Interviews, and we've got a special for you tonight, and we're going to run a commercial right now that L.A. sent to us. So hang in there, 3 or 4 minutes. We'll be right back with more X Squared Radio. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Have you ever thought about owning a telescope? I mean a really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They have come a long way, you know. Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. There is no better way to view the sun than with a coronoscope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get to watch the sun through one of these units. Who knows? You might just save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio.
Floods around the world. Global financial crisis. What does it all mean? Find out in a startling new book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, by best-selling author L.A. Marzulli. Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural is a hard-hitting expose of current events and how they may relate to ancient biblical prophecies. Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural explains the growing potential for nuclear war in the Middle East, the Great Deception, the so-called alien agenda, and groundbreaking new information on the return of the Nephilim and the UFO connection. Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural is available exclusively at lamarzulli.net. Plus, if you order now, you'll receive L.A. Marzulli's new e-book, The Alien Interviews, absolutely free. Don't wait. Get both of these groundbreaking books today for only $10 plus shipping and handling. Log on to lamarzulli.net.
Welcome back to X Squared Radio. Glad you're tuning in and getting squared. Coming to you live from southern Idaho, just beneath the starlit mountains tonight. By the way, if you go to lamarzuli.net, the link is at xsquaredradio.com. You'll get both those books for $10, and you'll also get the alien interviews for free. That is a great bargain. 20 million strong out there with BBS Radio Network, the arguably the largest internet talk radio network in North America, perhaps in the world. The difference between our listeners and those out there riding around in their cars and trucks is our listeners are sitting at their desk with a PC and a credit card in their hands. So if you're interested in advertising on X Squared Radio, you can reach us at xsquaredradio.com. Fill out the advertise form. Let us know who you are, what you want to sell, and if you match what we think we should put on the front of our website, then we'll put you in there. We have two affiliates right now in that spot. One is Campus Textbooks. If you have a college student, which I have one, and I can tell you that tuition isn't cheap, books are not cheap either. But modern times require modern solutions, and Campus Textbooks has a rental program where you can actually rent these multi-hundred-dollar textbooks for a semester, return them, and not spend all your money on textbooks. Now you can spend your money on other things. Campus Textbooks, click on the banner at X Squared Radio. And also, Vista Prints. You've seen Vista Prints out there almost everywhere, but if you click on the banner at X Squared Radio, not only do you get a discount, my goodness, you get them for free. Free business cards at Vista Prints. Click on that banner. Get your card out there and make your mark. Now we're back with our interview with L.A. Marzulli. In the last hour, we have really cracked open a relationship here between the space-time continuum, the reality that off-worlders, or at least extraterrestrials, and by that I mean maybe those that don't belong here on this planet from either other planets, other times, or other dimensions, are here on this world, and they're interacting with, apparently, humans here on this world. We're going to go into a little more detail on that right now with L.A. Marzulli. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me here, Brooke.
So we have this kind of human franchise on the planet Earth. You know, for 25,000 light years, in every direction that we look, there isn't a planet like her. Beautiful blue water planet floating in the cold blackness of space. And we're active. We put light out. We put radio waves out. We have a lot of life force on this world, kind of like Alderaan and, you know, Star Wars. It's just a living planet full of life and intelligence and ecology. And it's just bubbling with regeneration and beauty. And now we have what appears to be a phenomenon, a culture that on the one hand we're fascinated with because we love to go to the movies and we love to buy books about it and we love to tune into radio programs about it. But on the other hand, appears to be quite terrifying and quite traumatizing. And you made the comment in our last hour that fear itself is the currency of this phenomenon. So I'd like to go into that a little bit more this hour. Let's see if we can open that up and find out why it is that races or beings or forces would come from far across the galaxy by whatever means they need to get here to instill fear instead of involve themselves in the vibrant experience of survival on this planet. What's going on here, L.A.?
Well, let me just address that. I mean, why not give us the cure to cancer? I say that in one of my books, I believe in the Nephilim trilogy. I say if you're really from another planet and you've, you know, light years away or whatever, and you've come here and from Zeta Reticuli, why spend the time telling us that, and this is what some abductees tell us, that somehow the crucifixion wasn't necessary and that Jesus really wasn't God. I'm not making that up. Okay, that's on the record from other people who have been supposedly abducted, and that's what they're told. Why not give us the cure to cancer? Why are you so interested and so-called Christian eschatology, study of last days. Why are they so interested in this? Why not give us something we can really use, like the cure for cancer? But that's not what we see. We see a vigorous breeding program. We see everything done behind the scenes, and in my opinion, like Dr. Jacobs will agree with me, in a very nefarious way. These, in my opinion, again, are not extraterrestrial. They're interdimensional. What I found very interesting was last June when the new Indiana Jones movie was carted out in the Indiana Jones and the Temple of the Crystal Skulls. At the very end of that movie, of course, we see this huge UFO rising up from underneath the ruins of an ancient Mayan temple. And this is essentially a mothership. And without any of the characters saying anything, we can deduce from that that literally the gods of the Mayans were in fact extraterrestrials, and they were mistaken as gods. So as this huge UFO is rising up from underneath the temple and creating this huge cyclonic vibration and everything, and the UFO comes in, and Indiana Jones is there, and all the other guys, and you know, Indiana sees this thing moving away and goes, where is it going? Back into outer space? And his sagacious mentor goes, no, Indiana, it's interdimensional. And I about fell out of my chair when I heard that one. So it's like, is this propaganda? Is it just film? I mean, what are we really looking at here? I mean, is it done very deliberately to plant that seed in people's minds that was of course von Däniken has and other people, that somehow we were seeded here, the whole idea of panspermia, that we were seeded here thousands, tens of thousands of years ago, genetically manipulated by a race of so-called extraterrestrials, and now that we are at this critical juncture in human history, they have returned to help us and usher us into an age of peace and prosperity. Now, I'm not making that up. That is essentially what I term the alien gospel. That is exactly what we're being told from certain abductees who come back and let us know that what's going on. We see it verbatim from the Raelians. I mean, this was right out of Jerusalem Post, that the Raelians have they're trying to get an embassy there to welcome the so-called extraterrestrials. And the Raelian gospel literally could have come right out of my book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. It is literally verbatim what I wrote, that one, the aliens created all life on this planet, that they were worshipped as ancient gods, and now they're back at this critical juncture in human history. And again, the reason why I disagree with that is because of that threat of prophecy, which no other book on this planet has, not with that type of accuracy. No other book, nothing else points to that, except, you know, the ancient Judeo-Christian manuscripts have that threat of prophecy running through it, which at least as, you know, intelligent people today, we all have access to this stuff, we should be looking at it, reading it, and finding out, gee, I wonder what else this book has to say. If this one element in it is correct and true and right, and these prophecies are happening with 100% pinpoint accuracy, what's the force behind this thing? And that's of course what I write about.
Well, I guess I have a question. You know, I'm not unfamiliar with the scriptures. I'm wondering where it says in the Old Testament or New Testament that interdimensional off-worlders are going to come here and nefariously breed with us and either leave their offspring here on the planet to assume leadership positions with their agenda or leave the planet and come back as some expeditionary or invasion force at a later date. I just don't see it.
Well, let me point to something that we talked about in the first hour, the Nephilim, correct? And I told you what my opinion of that were, that they were actually fallen angels that came to Earth, cohabited with the women of the Earth, the offspring of the Nephilim, which resulted in the flood. Okay, we agree.
Yeah, and even after the flood, in Numbers 13, they show up again.
Okay, they show up again. Yeshua, or commonly known in the Greek as Jesus, says perhaps one of the most enigmatic passages in all of Scripture, when he says that the Son of Man will return, it'll be like the days of Noah. When the Son of Man returns, meaning himself, second coming, it'll be like the days of Noah. Remember, this is a 2,000-year-old scripture which has been handed down to us. So most people skip over that. And yet that one phrase is so pregnant with meaning, and it's perhaps the most enigmatic in all of Scripture. It immediately leads the reader to question, what differentiates the days of Noah than any other time in history? Because that's what you're, you know, what's the flag there? What's the marker? What can we look at in the days of Noah that differentiates it from any other time in history? And even Numbers 13, what we see is the open presence of the B'nai Elohim, the fallen angels cohabiting with the daughters of men, which from there we say, what are we looking at now? What's happening now? Can we draw a line back to the Nephilim? Is in fact these abduction scenarios and the abduction experience, is this a different manifestation of the same thing? Does it tie back into the Genesis 6 account? And as I said, the first book I read, which was The Omega Conspiracy by Dr. I.D.E. Thomas, that's really the ground that he travels with, or on, I should say. That's the links he tries to make between the Book of Enoch, the Genesis 6 account, Josephus, and the whole modern abduction phenomena, UFO phenomena. Now, that's a leap, and people have to take that leap at some point. But when we start looking at just that one scripture, which although it doesn't say extraterrestrials, and no one's saying extraterrestrials, but it's pointing to the days of Noah. And what differentiates that is the presence of the fallen angels. And you remember, you know, people think of fallen angels, what is that? You know, what does that mean, fallen angels? These beings are interdimensional. They're incredibly powerful. They're imbued with properties that, to us, are absolutely supernatural to the nines. They communicate telepathically. Now, those things I know. Okay, I know that for a fact, not only because I've had instances in my own life and encounters with beings like that, very, very rarely, but I've nonetheless had encounters with which I would call demons or fallen angels, okay? So we look at that and we see what's happening on the planet today. Not only that, we also see from other prophetic scriptures that talks about the elect would be deceived if that were possible. That
yeah, if it were possible.
If that were possible.
Hold on one second, LA. We have, I think we have Hank on the line.
Hi, Hank.
Are you there?
Hello.
Yes, yes. Welcome to the program, Hank. Do you have a question?
Oh, this isn't Hank. This is Lyle.
All right.
And yes, I do. I would like to throw this up for consideration. I think we're dealing with a bunch of different species from other places. Not only are they transdimensional, but they are extraterrestrial. And that's why I think things are getting, you know, we can't really discern a pattern for it from it because we're dealing with a bunch of different beings. As far as the fear factor, I would just say this. When we capture an animal and we tag it, I'm sure that animal has fear. It's not, I don't think it's always correct to say that somebody has a nefarious reason because another acts, responds to an action with fear. And let me give you a case in point. If the IRS sends you something saying that you owe $20,000, how are you going to react to that? You're going to react to that with fear and confusion. And maybe they made an error, maybe it's correct, but you're going to react to that with fear.
Well, I have to go along with L.A. here. It's not just the introduction of some being that looks different or acts different or speaks different than we do. They're actually probing and poking and doing, you know, surgery on people, and that's traumatizing.
And I don't deny that, and that's why I brought up the animals. When we help animals, even though we're helping them, their fear, you know, they're coming and seeing somebody capturing them, caging them, and then cutting on them when it's done to help. And I'm not saying, and I believe that there are good and evil aliens, extraterrestrials, interdimensionals. But I don't think you can say all of them are that way.
Oh, that's a good point, L.A. What do you make of that? That there might be benevolent off-worlders as opposed to only malevolent ones?
Well, I mean, and that's, look, the universe is a vast place. I don't have all the answers to everything. I don't. But what I do see is nothing but deception. For instance, let's walk through this, okay? Let's strip it down
sure.
and expose it for what
sure.
it is. Let's take a case in point of Blossom Goodchild, who on October 14th, and well before October 14th, she was communicated telepathically from so-called entities who call themselves and a part of the Federation of Light. I've been following these guys for well over a decade now, and I'm used to, you know, Sinana and the whole crew and the Ashtar Command and all this stuff, okay? So right away when I heard that, I began to blog and said that this is nothing more than deception. Nothing will happen from this. They lie and they lie continually. The problem was Miss Goodchild believed them and believed them wholeheartedly. And on October 15th, of course, the day later when nothing manifests and nothing happens, she comes on a YouTube video and she apologizes. But you can see, in my opinion, that it's very genuine. She doesn't understand why she was misled. She won't use the term lied to, but misled. And she said, I asked him over and over again, are you sure this is going to happen? You can see that she's distraught. Now, it may all be an act. You know, what do I know? I don't know the woman. I've never met her. But just looking at the video, looking at her body language, looking at the intensity of her expression, I believe that she is rebounding from being deceived, and deceived in a horrible way, where she thought these entities were wonderful and beings of light, you know, that are here to usher in a time of peace and all this nonsense. She's left flapping in the wind. And that's my case in point. They lie. They lie all the time. You can't trust them. Who is the father of lies? What are we looking at? You know, just because a being appears in your room and says, I am, you know, I'm Glinda, the good witch of the East. Baloney.
Exactly.
If somebody shows up at your house at 2:30 in the morning and goes, hey, I'm, you know, your lost uncle, Robert, are you going to believe that? Of course you wouldn't. Why would we take, then, an entity that appears or somehow begins to communicate with us, why would they immediately throw our brain at the door and believe that they're benevolent? Why would we? And then,
well,
you mentioned animals, you know, and you somehow, and I agree, you know, you talk about when we tag animals and all that. Human beings are not animals. You know, we have the gifts of speech and intellect and reason, okay? Surely, even a race that's so far advanced that can communicate it with telepathically, somehow they know our language, they can communicate with us, they know exactly what they're doing, and it's deliberate. They know exactly what they're doing when they create that climate of fear. You know, they move in it. It's very, very deliberate. Look at the cattle mutilation. They drop a mutilated. Think about that. It's your pet bull. It's your favorite horse or whatever. And it's mutilated lying in the pasture. It's basically they're flipping you the big one and they don't care. In any culture, that type of thing just goes against anything good. It's horrible. If you're an 8-year-old girl or a small boy and you're taken by these beings and your genitals are probed against your wishes, come on.
Well, I would just point out that you're, and I think we like to do this, we're trying to ascribe our mores on somebody that we don't know, we don't understand. And that's where I think we have, you know, we kind of fall down that, and
Let me ask you this: a race of beings that would be intelligent enough to fly across millions of miles and land on this planet, right? You think they would know that? Don't you think they would know exactly what they're doing when they're creating climate of fear? Why would they take a cattle, cut out its anus, and then drop it into the field like that? Why not dispose of it someplace else? Why deliberately do that? It's deliberate. It's not by accident. It's very, very deliberate. The abduction scenarios, very deliberate. The climate of fear is through the roof.
I agree with you. I think that they don't care. It could be that they're malevolent or that they don't care because we can't prove that they did it. You see what? Because when you, if I came to this planet and before I stepped foot on here, I would observe the culture. And, you know, looking at us on this planet, even though we're intelligent, we fight over stupid stuff like religion, that somebody's a different ethnic group, a different religious group. So if I'm looking at them, I don't think I'd put the intelligent quotient very high. That's why I said when you're looking at it from our point of view, yes, we're the top dog on this planet, but there are other bigger top dogs out there, wherever they exist, and if they examined us and saw that we were a warlike planet, ain't gonna kill anybody at a drop of a hat, then I wouldn't say, if from their point of view, they would say, hey, well, I can come and do whatever I want because they're not very intelligent.
Yeah,
they're
but
you're, going
again,
to
you're,
silly stuff.
You're only taking one dynamic of the human element. You're not taking the things that human beings excel in. You're not taking the way we care for people in hospitals, right? The way we look at disease and we try to help people. You're not looking at the great works of art, of literature, and any extraterrestrial entity would certainly look at, you know, a family structure and the love between a family and how people would die literally for their young and the way we care for our young and the way we care for an infant. I mean, all of those things would factor in. So you're just painting from a very narrow viewpoint. You're looking at the wars and the horrible parts of human beings, and I agree with you. There's a lot of nonsense on this planet, but there's so much incredible stuff on this planet that surely they would see our love for sports and the way we celebrate the Super Bowl, you know, this silly little game. I mean, it's a very complex society, and they would see that most of us hold life as something very, very precious.
Well, I would go back to something that Dr. Agnew said. If you know, we're a living planet, we're sending signals out in the galaxy. Don't you think that they intercept those signals? Now, when you look at the 6 o'clock news, what do they have on there? Do they have a lot of good news? No, they don't have a lot of good news. They point out the wars and what war may be occurring, how crime is rampant. So if they're detecting those signals, what do they have to base it on? Do they have good stuff to see us as? There are a few good stories on the news, but for the most part, it's fear that the news is generating and keeping us in and telling us all about the bad.
Yeah,
so if you're outside intercepting those signals, then you're going to think it's all bad too, unless you have an expeditionary force that goes out and actually checks out the society. And then,
well, that may be part of the problem too. You know, LA brought up the idea or the phenomenon of cattle mutilations. Most of the UFO community that I know, and that I meet a lot of MUFON people, and I go to conventions and speak, they're pretty well convinced it's our guys doing those cattle mutilations. They're picking those cattle up, mutilating them, and dropping them back down to create or to perpetuate this, you know, we want you to be deathly afraid of aliens. Do not try to interact with them, because this is what they're going to do to you, kind of activity. And you can read all the cattle mutilation stuff you want out there, and you're not going to find a friendly message among it. It really, really looks like somebody's doing biological experiments or work or genetic work or something using cattle, and maybe other animals too. And we also brought up the idea of Blossom Goodchild. You know, I don't doubt for a minute that somebody spoke to her in her mind and she had some revelation that this was going to happen. But what possessed Blossom Goodchild to go before the world? I mean, I got this email at least 10 times myself from networks that I've got. This woman was an absolute master marketer. She penetrated email networks that I've never received emails from. She was wonderful. I mean, if she would have been selling something, she could have made $1 million a day with her marketing technique. So it was another woman, Fire the Grid, about a year ago, year and a half, 2 years ago, that did the same thing. Amazing marketing skills. Why Blossom Goodchild? The build-up to this was phenomenal, just phenomenal. People that I trust wrote me emails and said, I'm booking a flight to Alabama. I want to go see the UFO on October 14th. I was just aghast with it. Just aghast with it. I don't doubt that she got the message telepathically or otherwise, but what empowered her to be the announcer to the world that this was going to happen?
Well, I'd like to point something out also. I guess we don't know, from all the stories that I've read, there were attempts by the extraterrestrials or interdimensionals that made contact with the United States, if you want to believe those stories. If that's the case, and they wanted to be, wanted us or our governments to tell us that that they existed, and if you look, our government hasn't told us that they existed. That,
well, that's a good point.
I'm trying to make the point is, how would they do it now? They see that they can't trust our governments because our governments just want to keep that information for themselves. And if they're passing technological things, they can see that we're basically at a standstill while, you know, the military probably has incorporated all the information that they found from the aliens. So what other choice do they have but to come to individuals? Now, like I said, I believe we're dealing with both the good and the negative, and both the good and the negative are probably talking to people, and they're leading some down a path that, like Miss Goodchild, and others, I guess we're looking for some earth changes to occur, and then they're supposed to be, some others are supposed to be activated. So I don't think we have a good picture, and we'll just have to use our discernment and prayers to get us past, to lead us in the right direction if we have that good heart.
Now that's a really interesting point, L.A. I want to bring that up. You know, fear is something that's imposed upon us from the outside, but we choose pretty much to either have fear or have love. What happens to the person who's being accosted when they bring the message of love out of their heart?
I'm not sure exactly what you mean. You know, the people.
Well, I mean, if they make a statement of love, they make a statement of faith, like "By the blood of Jesus," or "I love Jesus Christ," or "Please protect me, Jesus." That's not a fearful statement.
No,
they're reaching out, you know, with great love and great light. What happens to the situation when they do that?
Well, let's just go to one of my favorites, Lawrence Gray, who was interviewed in the Alien Interviews, and this guy. This goes back 40 years ago when I interviewed him on the phone. You have to understand that we stopped two or three times in the interview because recalling the experience was literally overwhelming and very upsetting decades later. I call it a psychic residue. This creature, he describes as wickedness, one word, wickedness, the manifestation of wickedness. When he says the blood of Jesus, he's not throwing light and love. He's using spiritual warfare tactics, which are, again, written down in ancient documents, which we call the Bible. Which is not this dusty old book. It's actually a spiritual warfare handbook. But you got to read it, and you got to understand how it works. And I'm not talking church here and religion with stained glass windows and ceremonies. And you know, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, dealing with interdimensional beings and how one when he begins to interface with one, how one deals with the situation. And that's what Lawrence Gray did. He dealt with the situation when he said the blood of Jesus. He's not offering a right hand to fellowship. He realizes that this entity is in front of him is wickedness, is incredibly malevolent, and only has his harm in mind. And so when he says this, the blood of Jesus, this thing immediately backs off because he's dealing, this entity now is dealing with a power much, much greater than himself. What we don't see, perhaps, is what's at work there. And look, I don't have the answer to that. I don't understand the dynamics of that. But I do know that in my own encounters with demonic entities, that when they come at you, it's very difficult to think or reason at all. They clog your mind up. You can barely remember your own name, barely. And I mean,
yeah, it's sort of like being caught in a burning house. You wake up in it. You have carbon monoxide in your system. You're deprived of oxygen, and you're trying to think straight, and you can't.
And you can't. I mean, they really screw with your head when you're in the presence of these things. And, you know, having been in that several times, I've learned that, first of all, I don't engage unless I absolutely have to. And when I do engage, it's to fall, immediately to fall back into that covering of the blood of Jesus, literally. And that pushes them away. That they can't, they can keep coming for a while, but they can't win. As long as I dwell there and work that, I can repel the mind attack, because really that's what it is. And it's overwhelming. I mean, when a person, look, it's why I'm not in a deliverance ministry or seek exorcisms in people. And I get emails all the time for people who are dealing with stuff. And, you know, I do so very, very reluctantly, because it's the type of thing where one must fast and pray before one begins to engage in entity like that. I mean, it's not something that we do in a very cavalier way or manner. You know, it goes back to Occam's razor. The simplest answer is usually the best answer. Is usually the one that we should embrace. And the whole point I'm trying to make is that there's a deception coming, that these entities talk about this, that different groups talk about it, and this deception essentially is what the alien gospel says, that we created you, we were the gods that you worshiped before, we caused all the miracles of the Bible and all this stuff, and now we're back to help you through. The problem with all this is, and again, I point to prophecy, that prophecy is one thing in a supernatural way that we can look at, and we can discern that there seems to be a benevolent overseer, call him God if you will, that knows the beginning and the end and has written this prophecy down for our benefit to show that he is who he says he is, because it's the only book on the planet that has that, literally, the only book. You could say, what about the Mayan calendar? Let's see what happens in 2012, okay? Let's see what happens in 2012. I'm saying that Judeo-Christian prophetic scripture has already been fulfilled in our lifetime within the last 60 years and continues to be fulfilled. It's what I write about, and part of what we're seeing, in my opinion, with the so-called extraterrestrial is, in my opinion, the coming great deception.
Well, I have one question for you. Do you
sure.
think there's only evil, or there's both good and evil in the extraterrestrial, interdimensional, etc. visitors?
Well, in the interdimensional world, you certainly got the good angels, and the difference between the good angels. I'm glad you asked that. It's a great question. When we see the good angels manifest, the first thing they do, fear not, peace be to you. They go over and touch a person. They raise them up. You know, they embrace them. They always, always, straight across the line, they always remove the climate of fear. In other words, when a human being is just in the presence, when they just manifest, we fall down as if dead. This happens in the biblical accounts over and over again. When angels appear, people fall on their faces as if dead, because the power that's there is overwhelming. Look at Lawrence Gray when he saw the Mothman, paralyzed with fear. The difference is the good guys go over and immediately ameliorate that fear. Immediately they peace be to you. They speak it over you. Person stands up and now they can receive the message. The bad guys don't do that. The bad guys thrive in a climate of fear and perpetuate it. See the difference there?
Yeah.
Well, with all fairness, you're talking about two different ages of the Bible, the Old Testament and the New Testament. In the New Testament, the angels would always say, you know, peace be unto you, fear not, for, you know, fill in the blank. But in the Old Testament, what you heard repeated over and over and over again is that God was jealous, he was enraged, and you must work out your salvation with fear and trembling before him.
I respectfully disagree with that. When the angel appears to Daniel, Old Testament book, the angel says, and Daniel falls flat on his face, the angel goes over and immediately restores Daniel and says, fear not, Daniel, beloved of God. So, you know, you're mixing some, you know, the whole thing, fear, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. That's a completely different scripture for a different time, which is not applicable to angels at all. That's just actually, I think it's from a psalm, but it has nothing to do with the manifestation of angels. When we look at angels manifesting, certainly to Daniel, which is, you know, thousands of years ago, certainly Old Testament, the angel says, fear not, Daniel, fear not. Picks them right up, and, you know, they start conversing. And Daniel is one of the most prophetic books in all of Scripture. So we see that the angel tries to restore him and dialogue with him and what he does. And, of course, Daniel has that dialogue and writes it down.
I agree. Book of Daniel is awesome, very inspirational. Any more questions for LA caller?
No, that's it. And thanks.
Hey man, good talking to you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on the program.
Okay.
Our phone lines are filling up pretty good tonight. And we'll be taking calls all night long. My guest is L.A. Marzulli, and he is the author of several books and more coming out. But he's also the author of Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. And you can get that and the Alien Interviews. You can get both of these books for $10, and you get to the Alien Interviews for free. If you go to his website, lamarzulli.net, try to put that in the body of the archives here so that if you're listening to this, the second hour of X Squared Radio, February 15th, 2009. You'll have a chance to go to that website. Many, many of our listeners go to work Monday morning, turn on their computers with their headphones on and listen to 3 hours of X Squared Radio while they're drawing blueprints or working on accounting or various things. So most of our listeners, about a terabyte a month, stream this program at their desktops, and we would not be here without them. So we appreciate you, and make sure that the purchases for our guests' material continues throughout the week so they can keep their lights on. In your book, you talk about an interview with a Mr. Sorrells, and he talks about a sighting that he had of not a small UFO, but an immense UFO. Can you tell us about that sighting?
I'd love to. The some people would know it as the Stephenville Lights, and Ricky Sorrell came on the record with me at least between a half a dozen and a dozen phone calls I had with him, and at several times when I called, the phone was tapped. I mean, it was just so obvious. It was ridiculous. The phone was clicking and whirring, and you could tell that, okay, there's something going on with the line here. And then it became untapped, and we could have conversations a couple of months later. But this guy had black helicopters over his house at 2:30 in the morning, and all sorts of weird stuff going on, threatening phone calls, and just some really weird stuff. But all this because in Stephenville, in January 2008, Stephenville, Texas, a very large craft was seen, not only by Mr. Sorrell, but by other people. Certainly a pilot came on the record on Larry King's show, came on the record and said that he had seen this huge craft along with other witnesses. So it was seen by multiple witnesses in different locations over a period of 24 to 48 hours. And Sorrell's story is just incredible. And I remember, I've talked to this guy at least a half a dozen times, never changed his story, never embellished it, wasn't interested in receiving any, you know, remuneration for coming on the record with me. Just, this is the story, this is what happened. And he was out deer hunting around January 1st, and he's out in back of his house in the woods, and this is in Texas, so there's no leaves on the trees. It's wintertime. And he's, you know, he's got his gun, and he's out there hunting deer, and he gets caught up in some brambles, a briar patch, and as he begins to work himself loose, he notices something overhead, and he looks up, and there, directly over his head, is a gigantic UFO. And, of course, he's immediately taken aback, speechless by this thing, unnerved by this thing. He told me that he looked in all directions and could not see the end of the craft, the edge of the craft. So this is a mothership. This isn't a little 30, 50-foot disc. This is something that he estimates was, you know, mile wide, mile and a half wide? Don't know. It moved silently over him and then began to move out in the horizon and slowly tilted at a 45-degree angle and moved out of the way. Just an unbelievable experience. He also talked about seeing the craft at a later date when it kicked on its lights. And he said when that thing threw on its lights, it was unlike anything he had ever seen before, absolutely overwhelming. One of the reporters in and around Stephenville, Texas, came on the record for the alien interviews. And what's interesting about her viewpoint is she interviewed many witnesses, and most of them are very reticent and coming forward because of the ridicule. They were afraid of being ridiculed. They were afraid of being thought of as a bunch of kooks or hicks or crazies or wackos or whatever. But they all saw the craft, and they were trying to deal with what they had seen. And this craft was between a mile and 2 miles wide, according to different witnesses. The thing was absolutely huge. Stanton Friedman points out this is a mothership. You know, anything that big is just huge. Now, there are people that say, well, this is Operation, you know, Blue Beam, which is all holographic and all this, and, you know, according to Mr. Sorrell, this thing, which is interesting when we listen to Ricky Sorrell's description of the craft and we go back 10 years prior to Phoenix Lights, we get similarities. In the Phoenix Lights, it was a boomerang craft. In the Stephenville, same thing, sort of a boomerang craft. And the one woman in the Phoenix Lights describes sort of the air undulating underneath the craft that silently passed over her. And Sorrell saw the same thing 10 years later. He describes it as looking at a mirage in the distance. The air was like moving underneath the craft. So they both have that same viewpoint. They're both underneath the craft. They both talk about the same anomalous phenomena underneath the craft, that air vibrating. I thought that was really interesting when I read that. But, you know, he saw this thing. It changed his life. It's not that he was looking for this. He'd never really been interested in ufology or UFOs or any of this. And he has one word for it. It's overwhelming. When a person sees a craft like this, it's overwhelming. All bets are off. Your worldview is going to get rocked. Unless, of course, you know what you're looking at. You've already got a worldview wrapped around what the phenomena is. In my opinion, if I saw that tomorrow, I would go, oh my gosh, they're here. This is the beginning of the coming great deception. This is the fallen angels manifesting on the planet. Now that's what I would say. And I would rebuke it.
Right. I know exactly where you're coming from. One of the things that is pretty clear when you start thinking about angels versus aliens is angels don't need a ship to show up. They just sort of walk through a light and show up, and they're usually here with a message of love or correction or some kind of mission from God. I'm wondering about Mr. Sorrell's story because I just find it so fascinating. We're not talking about a little light or a little black triangle floating around. We're talking about something immense, you know, that covered his whole farm and maybe the streets surrounding it.
Correct.
And the air undulating under it is very much like the pretty common report that there's some kind of plasma drive to these ships, that when they're flying very slow and they want to, you know, sort of repel Earth's gravity so they don't have to have a whole bunch of rockets blasting down at the ground, they just use a plasma which either repels gravity or creates an alternate gravity underneath them, oppositely charged from the planet they're at, and they can just kind of float around using very little noise. But what was fascinating about this is that he, at least in your book, I think he said that the craft actually blinked in and out of existence as it was moving along. And this is a big craft. It's like it just cloaked itself and then uncloaked right in front of his eyes. And what did he make of that?
Well, there's other UFO witnesses which have talked about the same thing. History Channel this week with UFO Hunters did a wonderful expose, which I write about in Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, of that huge mothership over the English Channel, which they estimated at least, you know, half a mile wide. I mean, the thing was huge. The pilot said a mile, over a mile wide. That's what he estimated of that. And as the thing came at him, it just sort of vanished. I mean, what the heck is going on here? The thing just sort of vanished. It's cloaking device? Cleon cloaking device? I don't know. We're dealing with physics here that we know nothing about, you know, at least at the present moment. We have no idea what we're dealing with. Are they interdimensional craft? And as you say, you know, angels apparently can just materialize whenever they want to, wherever they want to, like the angel who shows up for Daniel. Is this because, look, again, I don't have all the answers, okay? I'm not claiming I have every answer to every dynamic of the UFO phenomena. What I do sort of postulate with that is that somehow the bad guys were prohibited on some level. Are there portals which they come through? Are the portals guarded? For instance, when the book of Daniel, remember this is a 2,600-year-old piece of scripture that we have, and I want to de-church it for those of you who are listening. Just listen to the story. Forget religion. Forget stained glass windows and funny buildings and robes and all this nonsense. Just listen to the story. This guy is praying. In other words, he's asking for help, okay? He's asking his God for help. And all of a sudden, we see this angel materialize to Daniel. Daniel falls on his face as if dead. The angel restores him. It's okay, Daniel, get up. Then the angel says something which is very troubling to me and to most scholars who have read this passage. Hey, I was dispatched. When we heard the prayer 21 days ago, I was dispatched. Listen to this. But the Prince of Persia restrained me. Couldn't get through. What does that mean? How? The Prince of Persia is all over that area. Is there a gate, a portal, that the Prince of Persia was holding? So the angel says, I went back and got reinforcements. What the heck? What are we looking at here? And this other angel with reinforcements comes, and they do battle. Doesn't say how they do battle, but there's some sort of battle takes place. The angel was able to manifest. There's a principality over that area, and guess where that area is? Iraq, which is just mind-blowing when you think about. And that principality has never been deposed, never been overthrown, in my opinion. That angelic principality still holds dominion over that area, because the angel says that the prince of Persia, which is the whole area at the time, when you look where Babylon is, remember, Daniel's in Babylon, southern Iraq, but the prince of Persia was that whole area, which is now Iran and Iraq, okay? The prince of Persia restrained me. This is an entity. This speaks of an angelic entity, a bad guy, which we know nothing about. We get a little glimpse of. I wish there was a lot more detail. You know, name, rank, file number, give us a history of the prince of Persia. But he's restrained. He's got to get reinforcements. He gets the reinforcements. He breaks through. He talks to Daniel. Then he goes, I'm going to leave now, but I've got to do more battle, not only with the prince of Persia, but with, and he talks about another principality. What is going on? And that's my point. It speaks of some sort of a war that's continually happening in another dimension, which we know nothing about. It may hint at portals which are guarded by these angelic entities. And that's why Daniel had to fight to get here and fight to get back. It may also mean that part of the deception of the whole UFO thing is that's in order for them to manifest here, that's what they have to do. Because maybe the portals are guarded.
Ah.
I don't know. It's bizarre stuff, which is why the craft can kind of flit in and out of this dimension. Look, we don't know. Until we really get hard answers on it, it's just speculation. And I'm speculating. But I'm speculating based on almost 30 years of research and from a sort of a biblical prophetic overview, if you can put all that together.
No, that makes a lot of sense. That maybe the reason they can't come through, you know, all at once, a big sort of sky show to intimidate
right.
all of the air forces of the world, is because that there's some enmity between the worlds, and maybe it takes a lot of energy to even manifest themselves physically in this world. But in your book and in some of the interviews that you've had, it is clear that they are doing so, and they are interacting with the human community, but they're not being really friendly about it. You know, I've heard that these abductions tend to run in families, that they, you know, this would make sense with the idea that the off-world races are looking for genetic traits, or more importantly, with the generational results of their work. I mean, we do the same thing with mice pups. When we introduce various agents into the population,
right.
we're looking for hereditary effects and survivability of those traits from generation to generation. So that it's consistent with that. But it is clear from your book, your research, the things that you've revealed in your book, that there's something going on, and it's not friendly.
And look, I would certainly concur, and different people have different opinions. The Disclosure Project by Mr. Greer, I mean, I'm not sure really what his paradigm is, whether he believes that they're all friendly or that they're here to help humanity, but certainly when we look at the Raelians, that's what they believe. The Raelians are promulgating what I call the alien gospel. They believe hook, line, and sinker, and what I believe is the coming great deception. I'll say it one more time, that the aliens genetically manipulated all life on this planet. They created humankind as we know it. They were, in fact, our ancient gods, and now they're back to help us through this critical period. Listen, I believe, and, you know, I outline this very, very succinctly in Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. I believe that prophecy is going to be fulfilled in the Middle East, that the nations of the Ezekiel 38-39 prophecy, which is written 2,600 years ago by Daniel, by Ezekiel, rather, is actually forming on the horizon, that the nations, which are mentioned, again, with great specificity by the prophet Ezekiel, have, in fact, already lined up. There's a loose collusion, a loose confederacy, and they will go up against the land of unwalled villages, i.e. Israel, which is back in the land after almost 2,000 years of diaspora. This is prophecy being fulfilled in our lifetime. That war has not happened yet. When that war does happen, have me back on your show. I think it's going to be very soon.
I it scares me when I see the president of Iran mention by word Armageddon in his speech. I mean, that's just calling for
terrifying.
You know, disaster.
Terrifying.
I think our previous caller is back on the line and he has something else to add. Welcome back to the program.
Hello. I did forget to say a couple of things. One, with Miss Goodchild, when you said she did hear something telepathic, that reminded me that there is a U.S. government patent on using microwaves to put thoughts. You would be able to hear speech in your brain. So the government does have that technology, and if they wanted to, they could make somebody think that they were talking, they were hearing telepathic messages from aliens. So I wanted to throw that in there. And if you believe the Roswell incident, then that happened in the 50s, then we had all this time to back engineer some UFO, some craft that act like UFOs. So that could be another item that is throwing, you know, some confusion in there. And I do believe that some of the leaders of the world have some ancient knowledge, because I believe that we've been visited for a long period of time. And I was reading one author who said that in his talks with these aliens that this was a prison planet. It was where they banished their prisoners. And he went through a history of how, you know, this isn't the first time this planet had been populated with life.
Do me
That's
a favor.
Why we're finding some old artifacts.
Do me a favor. I'm going to give you my email address. It's la@lamarzulli.net. Send me your address. I'm going to send you a free book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, okay? Because anybody can write anything, okay? The difference between my book and other books is I point, again, I rely on the prophetic messages. And surely, once we start looking at the prophecies that are being fulfilled, we can begin to realize that something's going on here. You know, you can believe or not believe, but you got to believe at least that the prophetic messages that were written thousands of years ago are in fact happening. So shoot me your email, la@lamarzulli.net, and I'll send you a free book, because I want you to read Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. Maybe that'll give you a different viewpoint, because I really lay it out step by step. So it's la@lamarzulli, M-A-R-Z-U-L-L. LA@lamarzulli.net, and I'll send you a free Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural.
All right, thank you. There was one other thing that I wanted to mention when you were talking about the principalities. William Henry, and that's the bad thing about it, is I've read a lot of books, and I could go step by step. You know, my memory is not that good to go step by step from it unless I've read it recently. But with William Henry, he talks about stargates, and he said with the research that he had done that he believed that there is a stargate in Iraq, and he tends to believe that that's, well, he said he had heard that it may be one of the reasons why we went to war.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that whole scenario. I'm familiar with the whole scenario.
Okay.
Right.
So that may be the portal that the angel was talking about, or what they said was angels, and that he couldn't get through because of the battle. And I do want to mention in Revelations, it does, in the latter days, they do mention a war in the heavens.
Correct.
So that
Correct.
Could be the good against the evil.
Well, and that ties into, I mean, look, if we start traveling in the Christian, Judeo-Christian mythos, let's just use that word, because that's what it is. I mean, it's mythos. But if we believe it, then it can be, it moves from just being stories and mythos to perhaps what we're looking at is the truth. And you just said that it says very specifically that there was a war in heaven, and Michael fought against the dragon, and the dragon lost, and he's hurled to earth. I mean, when these things begin to happen, look, the title of my next book is called The Acceleration, The Rush Towards Armageddon. Now, why am I writing that book? Because I sit here every day. This is what I do for a living. I answer tons of email. I do a lot of radio talk shows. And this is what I do. And I research and talk about books and material for other books. And what I see from my vantage point is an acceleration of everything to the point where I can barely keep up with what's going on the planet. And that's just only from, you know, just some of the news sources that I look at daily. We are rushing
we're having a hard time keeping up with our time, too. We are out of time for this hour.
Okay,
if you
great.
Do want to hold on, we'll come back in about 3.5 minutes with more, our third hour of X Squared Radio. Don't go away. We're getting out there. We'll be right back after these messages. Our friends down at NRG Resources have introduced a new engine oil technology. TVT 24/7 is the future of lubrication. This is the industry's first environmentally friendly oil additive that not only increases fuel mileage, it reduces engine, gearbox, and transaxle wear to nothing. The other brands fail anti-friction testing in less than 10 minutes under standard testing conditions. TBT 24/7 went more than 24 hours in the test and still did not fail. Get to Miles Technology today by visiting the online store at X Squared Radio and pick up TBT 24/7 Engine Oil Energizer. There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the six-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today. If you have survived a disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of the Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio.
Of wars, famine and pestilence, earthquakes. earthquakes and floods around the world. Global financial crisis. What does it all mean? Find out in the startling new book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, by best-selling author L.A. Marzulli. Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural is a hard-hitting exposé of current events and how they may relate to ancient biblical prophecies. Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural explains the growing potential for nuclear war in the Middle East, the Great Deception, the so-called alien agenda, and groundbreaking new information on the return of the Nephilim and the UFO connection. Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural is available exclusively at lamarzulli.net. Plus, if you order now, you'll receive L.A. Marzulli's new ebook, The Alien Interviews, absolutely free. Don't wait. Get both of these groundbreaking books today for only $10 plus shipping and handling. Log on to lamarzulli.net.
Welcome back to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. Remember, in here, the results are always positive. We're glad you tuned in and are getting squared. In our last hour, we had a lively discussion, and it's going to continue this hour. I'm going to bring up a couple items of news. Next week, if you're in the area and you have access, I will be speaking at the Arantha School of Enlightenment at what is known as a blue event. Not much time left, but we will be discussing the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. I thank everyone for the wonderful emails and help we have received so far. We'll keep you posted. Again, remember, that's a scientific expedition for entertainment purposes. I am asked to say that. And we're going to try to take a film in a place on the Earth from a place that no one has ever been before. So, too old and too poor to go to the moon or Mars, but I think this we can do. So sooner or later, sometime in August, we're going to mount a Russian nuclear-powered icebreaker and go above the Arctic Circle and see what we can see. We'll bring back some answers for you. In our last hour, we were discussing with L.A. Marzulli and our caller, and we brought up four really good points. One was a U.S. government patent, and that was actually filed by Bernard Eastland. And the project is called HAARP, H-A-A-R-P, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project. And that is actually a giant billion-watt ionospheric heater. And one of the things that they discovered is that certain very low frequencies can be tuned just exactly right to actually cause voices to be heard in your head, sort of mimicking revelation, as it were. And L.A. Marzulli brought up a very, very good point in the scriptures, in actually Revelations, I believe it says, in the last days, if it were possible, even the very elect would be deceived. And we have seen the likes of Blossom Goodchild fall prey to that very deception and go out there in public and make a statement, or at least a prediction that didn't come true. The other thing that we brought up was Dr. Stephen Greer and his maintenance that all UFOs, all aliens are probably benevolent, and the bad ones that we see are nothing more than the nefarious works of our own shadow government, and that we definitely, according to him, have craft that can make a left-hand turn at 10,000 miles an hour. So there you have it. And also we want to know that our good friend William Henry just returned from Egypt. He is doing that on a almost, well, probably more than annual basis now, because a lot of information is starting to come out of antiquity to prepare us for against being deceived when this master message is sent out to everyone. And the confusion is, and I think we're going to discuss that this hour, what is the message? Is the message, you know, we're from the galactic government and we're here to help you? Or is the message, you know, do not trust anyone from other worlds, only pay attention to the man behind the curtain? So let's discuss that this hour, L.A. And caller, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Go ahead.
I wanted to add something real quick, and I don't know
anybody else has heard it, and I can't remember where I heard it from. But everybody remembers the Star Trek creator, Gene Roddenberry.
Sure.
It was said that he got that idea of Star Trek from an alien visitor and told him that's what existed. Had anybody else heard that?
I've heard that same story, and later, after Gene passed, his wife was actually Deanna Troi's mother. She played a Beta Zed for at least one or two seasons. Really brilliant woman. And she had some interviews after that where she had said that Gene had actually been handed that whole relationship with the Federation and, you know, alien races out there trying to gain control over the galaxy, and the idea of lithium crystals and warp drive and all of that. Actually, you know, I don't think it was all about Captain Kirk kissing all the alien women. It was just neat, you know, how they brought all those personalities in. Of course, that spun off a lot of different shows. And then, I was going to say prophetically, but maybe we'll use that word. Two great directors dig into their archives and bring out two works that just blossomed into whole cultures. One is Steven Spielberg, and the other is George Lucas. Mm-hmm. Star Wars was immediately scooped up, not just by kids, but by adults that were just, you know, resonating with this whole message of good versus evil. The Force, at least in the first series, was this sort of spirit of life that throbbed in all living things around the universe. And the dark side was when you get caught up in ego and power, and fear leads to the dark side. And in the second series, they ascribed it to the midichlorians, which I thought was a big letdown. I like the good versus evil part. And then Steven Spielberg with his really dug in and pulled out Close Encounters of the Third Kind and E.T. And then sort of his dark side came out in the series Taken, which he sort of paints a more dark side of the alien encounter. It's not this angelic, very delicate, beautiful, poetic being that shows up on the Devil's Tower in Wyoming. So there you have it. It's laid out, and this is what we have as our culture now. This is what we're vibrating with. So what's really going on, L.A.?
Well, again, look, I filter everything through the paradigm of a lens of ancient biblical prophecies. I mean, that's just what I look at. And the reason for that is not because it's some dusty old book, because I had an experience, which is an ongoing experience of like bordering, you know, 29 years now. It doesn't go away. And this is the experience which actually started the early church, you know, 1,000 to 2,000 years ago. Remember, the early church was underground. It was persecuted relentlessly. And then
sure
around
it was.
300
oh,
years
yeah.
later, without, you know, boring you with the whole history of the Christian church, but Constantine declared it the religion of the empire, and, you know, it went downhill from there, so to speak. The experience that has been obfuscated literally for 2,000 years, and has been, the word born again has been bandied around so much that, you know, it's become a laughing stock for the most part, and people really don't understand what it is. But that's precisely what the experience was thousands of years ago, and it continues today, and it's life-changing. And, you know, that dovetails into the whole prophetic message, which Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural talks about, but it also gives us a window into these supernatural or paranormal, to me the words are interchangeable, supernatural slash paranormal phenomena that is burgeoning on the planet as we speak in real time. You know, we can disagree or agree, but the cattle mutilations are all caused by governmental, you know, a secret ops and some black ops thing of the United States government, or perhaps it's a combination of both. Same thing with the crop circles. I mean, we can always try to shift the blame to one or the other. No one really knows for sure. We can't agree that it's nefarious. We can at least look at the crop circle phenomena, and while many of them certainly are hoaxers, the ones that aren't, once again, proclaim that who's ever doing this does it with impunity. We can agree on that. We can agree that, UFOs, huge UFOs, moving into our airspace, once again, they appear and disappear with impunity. Aircraft, UFOs that hover for 15 minutes in a at the O'Hare Airport, UFO Hunters did a wonderful program on that last week. Again, these craft are not supposed to be here. They're moving with impunity. We can do nothing to stop them. So,
that's true.
Same thing with the abduction phenomenon. Most people have not been able to stop their abduction, which brings me to Joe Jordan, which again solidifies the paradigm. Let me just give you the one example I gave was
the Mothman.
Lawrence Gray with the Mothman, thank you, who basically said the blood of Jesus and the Mothman backed off. The other one is Joe Jordan. Joe Jordan in 2008 spoke at the Roswell Convention, okay? At the very end, and he presented, I've seen the DVD, it's wonderfully done, great presentation. And what he proposed was that within the UFO community, there's actually a cover-up within the UFO community. In other words, people really don't want to hear that the paradigm we're looking at is not one of extraterrestrials. In fact, it's interdimensional, and it has so-called religious overtones. So we need to throw out the religious overtones, because so many people come to the table the moment you mention that with all sorts of preconceived ideas. I would propose that we look at it in the light of supernatural and paranormal events, and these entities are moving in another dimension and have physical properties and inherent abilities that we know nothing about. Jordan was able to bring on the table 2008 Roswell Convention. He brought out about 12 to 15 people who claimed to have stopped their abduction phenomena by evoking the name of Jesus or specifically saying the blood of Jesus during the abduction phenomena, while they're screaming in terror, by the way. But they were able to stop their abduction. Some of these people counseled with Joe. They became Christians, or they were Christians, but they learned how to fight, and their abduction stopped. Now, that stood the place on its head. Some people walked out, didn't want to hear it, which, again, I mean, look, if we're going to embrace all views, like in my book, The Alien Interviews, I haven't censored anybody, and you've read it, Brooke. You know what there is. No one's censored. No one is looked at or ridiculed. All viewpoints are welcome. Okay? I completely disagree and have a different worldview than, let's say, Dr. Jacobs or Dr. Roger Lear or Dr. Lynn Katai, for that matter. I have a different worldview. And yet I welcome them into the book. I give an intro and an outro. I don't editorialize on what they say. I let the reader make up his own mind what we're looking at. Again, we may disagree as to what the phenomena is, but we can agree that the phenomena is real, it's burgeoning, and it's not going away. The whole thing is
exactly right. Yep, exactly right. Ellie, we have another caller on the line. Keith, you're on the phone. What's on your mind?
Hey there, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Doing wonderful.
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, then it's Keith. I think the audience be interested in hearing how the culture is being, for lack of a better phrase, the primer going out there amongst the entertainment industry to make the subject matter of UFOs more palatable, particularly your observations on the Indiana Jones movie and how the end of that movie was and the setup in the script for that and how it ties into kind of making it all more easily to be accepted.
Great question. Thanks, Keith. Really appreciate you calling in. If we look at the Indiana Jones movie, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls, like I talked about in the first hour, when that huge UFO ascends from underneath that Mayan temple, where it's been for who knows how long, and it moves off into what we now know is supposedly some sort of an interdimension, are we being set up? In fact, I wrote a paper called Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls, Propaganda or Entertainment? And in my opinion, it's sort of propaganda. People are being sort of conditioned through movies like Taken and E.T. and certainly this new one, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls, to look at what's going on. What better way to indoctrinate millions of people without really saying anything and just have a hero like Indiana Jones, and there it is, and somehow these entities are benevolent, and they're here, and they're the gods that we worshipped before. Now they're back again. I mean, what it speaks of, without ever saying it, it basically, that movie indoctrinates people into believing that that the ancient Mayans actually worshipped E.T. That's what it says. It doesn't say it openly. It's more subtle than that. But when we draw the conclusions that there's a Mayan temple built over the UFO, guess what? When we look at 10,000 B.C., it's similar, although that's more of the people that are building the Great Pyramid are really, in my opinion, probably the Atlanteans. It never really alludes to it. But again, they're worshipped as gods. And are we being set up, and thank you, Keith, for bringing that to light and pointing me to discuss that. Are we being set up culturally to sort of accept this coming great deception? And my short answer to that is yes. It's a resounding yes. We are being set up in so many different ways to accept when these guys finally do reveal themselves. Most people embrace the lie. Remember, it goes back in the prophecy that the elect would be deceived if that were possible. That men fainting from fear from what is coming on the earth. Satan comes with all signs of lying wonders.
You know what's interesting about that movie? Unlike the other Indiana Jones movies where you're dealing with the Temple of Doom or you know, various archaeological activities between the Nazis and the good guys, is this movie was going along just fine, talking about crystal skulls, which certainly is a huge culture out there that believe in these, I don't know, 13 or 14 crystal skulls that are on the earth right now. This really couldn't have been made by any earthly process that we know of. And they weave this into this story, and the story's going along just fine, good guys, bad guys, Russians, whatever. And all of a sudden, boom, here are these interdimensional beings. But they're not there to teach and to control the world. No, they're collectors. And it makes no sense whatsoever. Here's an interdimensional being with his craft full of gold and full of, you know, artifacts from all over the world. That made no sense at all. I got the feeling that the movie got completely edited right there at the end just so they could deliver the very message that you are talking about, L.A.
It's, you know, look, it's sort of interesting, and what I see happening, and I'm borrowing the terms from our good old friend Mr. Gorbachev, former president of the Soviet Union, but we're moving into a time of glasnost or perestroika regarding the UFO phenomena. For instance, the Vatican came out in the spring, Funes came out, a spokesman for the Vatican basically saying that if the extraterrestrial does manifest, we should regard him as our brother. Isn't that interesting? What does he know that we don't know? Edgar Mitchell comes trotting out, you know, saying that Roswell really did happen. The governments know all about this. France, Belgium, and now the UK in the fall of 2008 came out and declassified some of their documents specifically regarding extraterrestrial craft, which were about to be fired on by a pilot, one of our guys, over England, and just before he was about to release all 24 of his weaponry, this craft, which he described as twice the size of an aircraft carrier, that's big, took off at over 10,000, he says between 10 and 20,000 miles per hour, then just whisked away. So that's really fast. So what we see is more of an openness, more of a perestroika. In 2008 on the Larry King Show, 1 hour, they had George Norrie, Stanton Friedman, they had several people, several witnesses from the Stevensville UFO flap on the show talking about this sighting. So we're seeing more and more of it coming to the front, and I think it's really good. Is the public being, in other words, we've shifted from anyone who sees a UFO as a nut or a kook or a crackpot to, gee, something is happening, we need to start discussing it. And that's what we're starting to see in the media. So when we look at movies like Indiana Jones and the King with the Crystal Skull, and combine that with what's being released now in this period of perestroika or openness, are we in fact being set up, being prepared for some sort of full disclosure? Look, Greer and others of his ilk believe that. They believe that there's going, at some point, full disclosure is going to take place. I think it's going to take place too. The difference is I put it, and I could be wrong on this. This is speculation on my part, but I put it at the end of this prophetic war, which is talked about in Ezekiel 38, which is going to happen in the Middle East. Between, guess who the first country listed is Magog, which is Russia. The second country listed is Iran. I mean, remember, that prophecy is written 2,600 years ago. Go back 100 years earlier, and we wouldn't be talking about this. Israel didn't exist. You know, Russia was it was not really a second-rate power, but, you know, it's not what it is today. And Iran was a joke as far as, you know, some sort of, it was under the Ottoman Turks and wasn't even a country as we know it today, okay? And so here we have this prophecy written 2,600 years ago, and now we see the players with great specificity in place. The stage is set. Israel is back in the homeland, and for 2,000 years of diaspora, which is absolutely phenomenal, against all odds, there's no way that country should be there. And then who do we see in the prophecy? This confederation of states which come against this land of unwalled villages. Now, here's something to think about. That term, a land of unwalled villages, was an absurdity in the ancient world. A land of unwalled villages didn't exist in the ancient world. The first thing a civilization did, any country would do, would be to take that city and fortify that city with the highest, widest walls one could possibly build. And that's what the ancient world was, until, of course, the advent of the airplane, which rendered all that moot and useless. But in the ancient times, that's what people dwelt behind, huge walls with moats and towers and fortifications and all that, all right? So the writer, 2,600 years ago, this is how bizarre this is, and this is what I'm talking about with, it's not fuzzy quatrains like Nostradamus. It says, in the latter days, in the end of days, after I regathered you from the four corners of the earth and reestablished you in your land, and then it lists the nations, Magog and Persia and these other countries, will go up against a land of unwalled villages. See how absurd that is? That in the ancient world, nothing like that even existed. So here the prophet, 2,600 years ago, is transported into the future. And he looks at this land of unwalled villages, and he's going like, I don't understand this, but he writes it down. What is Israel now? A land of unwalled villages. If Magog
I just want to differ just a little bit. Israel is walled. There is a fence all the way around it. There's only one place.
No, not all the way around. It's just a fence.
Unwalled villages, and that's the United States. The United States is the only land of unwalled villages.
Well, we have a wall which is the same way the Israelis' wall is. We have it's 600 miles. We have another 60 miles to complete the wall, and it would be complete, the wall between us and Mexico.
We can move freely between our villages, state to state, city to city. We're free to do that.
Right, caller, the Israelis are. They're free to move about wherever they want to.
Keith, did you have a point?
Well, no, I was just listening to all that. I mean, sort of going back, I was just thinking on your point with the first Indiana Jones, just to take a right turn for a second, when you talked about the reference to the aliens and having these things. It was interesting. It was commingled in the first movie with the what you would perceive to be the Ark of the Covenant.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting, the mix of outwardly sort of UFO type of affiliations with a biblical reference of the Ark of the Covenant. That's what they thought all power would come from, if you remember.
Well, the Nazis were seeking the Ark of the Covenant because of its value as a weapon. And
exactly.
When it was revealed, when the lid was taken off,
but the, fact
the
that
angels
they felt it,
came
the fact.
Out and destroyed evil and went back inside.
Right. But the fact
but
that they
one,
chose,
one was
the fact that the scriptwriters chose the Ark of the Covenant to bring, you know, of all the forces to choose in the universe of any science fiction, you know, to write, to choose that as a weapon was very interesting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then the second one was the Holy Grail, and then the third one was the Crystal Skull. So, our third one was the stones that ostensibly restore life to the ancient, could have been Nepal, could have been India. And then the last one was the aliens. You know, it's all entertainment, but just like L.A. is saying, are we being prepared by the leaders of our media for some kind of event? I mean, come on, the last couple of years we've heard from religious leaders and from governmental leaders, the Holocaust didn't happen, Roswell did happen, and we have the likes of Ed Grimsley out there saying that there is warfare going on between UFOs and the skies above our world right now.
Yeah. Well, the movie Contact, for example, if you remember the you know, the, sort of the religious leader of the movie. I can't remember the actor's name at this point, but he, you know, postulated that there was some sort of reconciliation between the faith and Christian, and the president had a liaison between the world of faith and religion and extraterrestrials, and trying to bridge the gap. Of course, the Christian was, you know, portrayed as with the long white hair and sort of a, you know, a fanatic in the movie, but the movie was, you know, intended to certainly put out the point of bridging the gap that they're out there, and they're far greater than we have, and we have no concept about ourselves or our existence or anything. There's been numerous. Was the one with Gary Sinise, Mission to Mars. I mean, you can go on and on and on with a number of movies that Hollywood has put out to soften the idea of extraterrestrial life and our origins come from them.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I thought that was not just subtle, but it was amazing that they.
Yeah.
Sure. Right there at the end of the movie, they paint the picture that you know, they sent seeds of life to Earth from Mars,
right.
And they came from another world themselves.
Yeah. Even Armageddon. You know, now the people at Armageddon, they go to the top of the building. I think it was in New York City. They're all wearing these funny hats, and they're inviting them down. You know, please, you know, show us the way, and it goes on and on and on. The way it's.
Oh, that was Independence Day.
Yeah, that's Independence Day, right?
Yeah, excuse me, Independence Day.
Yeah, Independence Day.
Yeah, that was a cool movie too. I really like Will Smith's. You know, take on
great.
It when he just punches the guy in the head and says, "Welcome to Earth." So here's the bottom line. There's a huge culture that's emerging in this generation, and prepared, not prepared, through the media, through games, through whatever, if it's organized or not. But here's the culture. Earth has been around for a long, long time, and maybe man hasn't been the only race that's lived on her. And do we or do we not, like in this latest movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still, when Sally Struthers said, well, this is our planet, and the character played by Keanu Reeves says, your planet. You see what I'm saying? You see how this is being laid out before us?
And I would say that's part of a deception. I mean, it's like, if it's deliberate that film is there, your planet, and saying all this, the whole idea of panspermia. I found it interesting. There was a movie by Ben Stein called Expelled, which is required viewing, in my opinion, because it really, you know, going back to the whole Darwinism thing that we talked about in the first hour briefly. But, you know, he's there with Richard Dawkins, who really is the spokesman for the evolutionary theory. And he just sits down with him one-on-one at a table. So there's no, and just says, okay, if life didn't, you know, where did life come from? And Dawkins is speechless. Dawkins has no answer. I mean, he has no answer because he doesn't know. And he says, and this is what he says, it should be required viewing. He goes, well, maybe millions of years ago, far away in another galaxy, and at this point, Stein's kind of looking at him, raising his eyebrows, going, this is the most intellectually bankrupt argument I've ever heard. In other words, you won't look at creationism. You won't even, you know, give it a nod, but you're expecting, you have no answer, and you're intellectually bankrupt, and you expect us to believe that, you know, maybe millions of years ago in some panspermia type thing from another galaxy seeded life throughout the universe, which is what panspermia means and what it is. And it's so disingenuous in my opinion. And that's why I'm always bringing it, I'm doing it again, bringing the listeners back to that prophetic thread. Because here's something supernatural and paranormal that we can't understand. It's someone written something thousands of years ago, and yet we see that prophecy being fulfilled. That's got to wake us up. It's got to give us a wake-up call. It's not Nostradamus, you know, four lines of fuzzy prophecy that can only be interpreted by someone who speaks French. You can read this stuff in English, and you tell me what it says. I mean, some of the prophecies that are talking about. And we see them lining up, getting ready to be fulfilled, some of them already being fulfilled in our lifetime. And that, to me, speaks volumes because it talks, it shows us another paradigm. It gives us a glimpse into another dimension which we know nothing about. And in my opinion, the author behind that is very benevolent, very wonderful, and people should get to know who he really is.
I just think that, if I may, I think that the connection that Lynn is making it is so rational you know, in speaking with evidence and things coming before us, just recently in the news, this is, you know, 2 weeks ago, you've got Australia, Prime Minister of Australia, I think Britain, Tony Blair, you're talking about Merkel, all calling for one world government, one world order. Who would have thought 20 years ago, as an American citizen, you would think that, you know, the United States was, you know, a fortress unto itself, that any of those kinds of hints or dialogues or innuendos about that would ever be, could even be postulated. And now with the crisis, you know, that we're going through economically, and, the, you know, President Obama trying to bring, you know, this sort of messiah message to, I'll take care of it, it's going to be happening, joined with now the European leaders saying, you know, we just need to rethink everything that we're doing globally. Now it's in our lexicon. It's almost normal mm-hmm. to be thinking down those lines. And who would have thought that 20 years ago?
Good point. Real good point.
Yeah. And of course, Keith, that L.A., one question. Do you think it's possible, given the knowledge that we have, given our ability to communicate, to get our ideas out there, to awaken the populace, do you think it's possible that we could walk away from Armageddon, or are we doomed to blow the crap out of each other?
Well, first of all, we don't blow the crap out of each other, and it's not total annihilation. There will be at some point, according to what I read anyway, when the second coming actually does happen, he puts an end to it. Otherwise, we basically would. In fact, Yeshua, Jesus says something which, in my opinion, are the most sobering words in all of Scripture. He says that unless those days were shortened, no flesh would survive. I'll say it again. Unless those days, speaking of the time in Armageddon, the time of Jacob's trouble, the time of the tribulation, the end days, whatever you want to call it, unless those days were shortened, no flesh would survive. And what he does is, when at the second coming, he stops the war. That's what he does. He stops the war. In other words, we're going at it full tilt. No, not against him, against each other. Just like you said, we're blowing the snot out of everybody, you know, everywhere. All the armies together in this one valley in Armageddon, which is huge, by the way. I've seen pictures. Never been there, but I've seen pictures of it. It's just huge. And he puts a stop to the war. That's what he does. It's incredible. But let me just touch on something that Keith said. Keith, thanks for the call. Fantastic call, by the way. But one thing he talks about is the idea of the one world government. Again, that is talked about very, very succinctly in Scripture, in prophecy. It talks about this global one world government. Not only that, but it talks about a one world religious system. And you remember, like, you know, 100 years ago, we wouldn't be talking about any of this stuff. It would be just foolish to talk about it. You know, the national sovereignty, and yet, as Keith mentioned, just 2 weeks ago, we had Merkel, Sarkozy, former Prime Minister Tony Blair, all talking about a one-world economic system, a one-world government. This points directly back to prophetic writings, thousands of years old, which tells us with great specificity that at the latter days, in the end times, there will be this one-world economic system and a one-world religious system, where people
We're very close to it now. It's almost playing out right out of the Nephilim playbook.
Well, you look at 500, whatever, Congress. How many people? 535 people in Congress. 535 people just rammed through legislation that nobody basically read. I mean, that is the power of a small group of people to affect the course of a nation.
And really, not
the
only
world.
A nation, but the world.
Yes, because the rest of the world is interconnected financially with our markets and stuff like that. I mean, think of that. What a small group of people, combined with a small group of people that run the media industry and the television and film industry, that's a relatively small group of people who write the scripts and put the shows on and approve or disapprove the dialogue that we are going to have. And that's the next change, the next group would be the third world of this nation, and that's the media industry. You have a very small group of people running things.
Terrible.
Well, and that strongly supports the case that L.A. is trying to make, and I tend to ascribe to this as well, that there is a group, a small group. They might be off-worlders, they might be interdimensional, but they're immensely old and immensely knowledgeable. And what they have done over literally centuries of time is they have trained, they have traded global power, as they perceive it, to men who will then trade with them this quid pro quo that L.A. was talking about in the first hour. And now we are at a point where exactly, even 30 years ago, we would have thought this was impossible. Mm-hmm. Currencies of the world are being condensed. We're going to a North American currency, we've gone to a European currency, and now the yuan is absolutely dominating Asia. We're down to basically three major currencies in the world. How long will it take before we combine them all into one, eliminate cash, and then we are completely a one-world government?
And listen,
we could do it by Christmas.
This was prophesied thousands of years ago. Here's something else to think
yes.
about. This is from Daniel, which we talked about a little bit. Daniel talks about in the latter days, in the end times, okay, that mankind will run to and fro over the face of the earth and knowledge will increase. There's a real specific prophecy. And if we were to graph that, put that on a graph, basically from the time when that prophecy was written until the Industrial Revolution is pretty much a flat line. Not a whole lot happens. The Gutenberg printing press, little blip. That's really a good thing. But the Industrial Revolution, we see a huge spike. Move that forward 100 years into our day, in the information age. Now knowledge doubles every 18 months. Is that a fulfillment of that prophecy? What about men traveling to and fro over the face of the earth? Again, before the advent of the automobile and the modern age, that was it, the horse. That's as fast as you got. Now we communicate at the speed of light with the Internet. You know, we have the Concorde and other planes which can take us from one part of the world to the other part of the world. We literally travel to and fro over the face of the earth, and knowledge has increased. Is that a fulfillment of that prophecy? In my opinion, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And almost in the same prophecy, it also says that the riches of men will become slippery, and you won't be able to hold on to them. We've had a billionaire throw himself in front of a train last month because his predatory hedging of small companies and his destructive capitalistic ways came back to haunt him, and he went broke overnight.
Yeah, like Madoff, you know?
That's the guy. Wow, awesome show. I told you, L.A., this goes by in 15 minutes. We just get energized, and before you know it, 3 hours is gone. We have about 10 minutes left in the program. Keith, I really appreciate the phone call.
Yeah,
put us on
a lot,
speed
Keith.
Dial.
Okay, well,
you're coming
you guys,
back.
Close it out. Great job.
All right. Thank you, Keith.
All right,
thanks. So, L.A., I mean, you're pulling all this together. You've written books on the Nephilim, on the UFO phenomenon, and I think you've hit the nail on the head that there is at least a theme of deception. Nobody, at least in the UFO culture, has the real message of what's going on. You mentioned, and I forget the gentleman's name, but at the Roswell convention,
George,
he talked about, yeah, how to block the uninvited possession and use of the mortal body by an external force. Doing that by declaring the blood of Jesus, or at least your faith in God, which is the creator of the universe. These others are just merely occupants and pirates, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the UFO culture didn't want to hear it. They didn't want to hear it. They want to see global first contact. They want to see these mile-wide diameter ships come right down and land in Phoenix, Arizona, daytime. Let's make contact. Let's rock and roll. Am I wrong?
Well, I don't think you're wrong at all. And see, the part of the problem is most people confuse churchianity with really the experience. The experience is just phenomenal. The experience is ongoing, and it's been obfuscated by the very organization which is seeking to promulgate it. Go figure. Now I'm broad brushing here with a pretty wide brush, but the ancient, you know, the first Christians in 300 years had an experience. So, you know, I'm looking at this thing from that biblical worldview, the Christian paradigm, and I mix a lot of prophetic into it, and I'm seeing that this is the coming great deception, which I believe is talked about in these ancient manuscripts. The other people on the other side that want to see these things manifested have abandoned any type of, let's say, Christian roots or what let's say their most of our parents or grandparents, most, and I'm broad brushing again, were steeped in and believed in. There's been a shift, a break away from that. And now they're looking for something else. Okay? And that's why they'll embrace the lie. Scripture tells us that they'll embrace the lie because they did not accept the truth. God sends them great delusion. And I think that that's what's happening. That is what is, that we're being set up for it. That's why I write about, look, the subtitle of Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural is The Coming Great Deception and the Luciferian Endgame. And this is what it is. It dovetails with prophecy. I'm not pulling rabbits out of my hat. If UFOs weren't manifesting, I'd be looking for what was manifesting and writing about that. But UFOs are manifesting.
Sure.
In my opinion, it's nefarious. It's malevolent. It's deception to the absolute nines. And people who are following this thing will be deceived, and they will believe a lie, which is that aliens created us. They were our ancient gods, and now they're back to somehow bring us into an age of enlightenment.
You've made that case very clear,
and
I don't disagree with it. I think I don't disagree with it at all. I think that there are great forces at work here. If it were not so, the great beings of the universe, even Jesus himself, would not have come here to have his mortal life. Earth is a very important place. I think, do we have another caller on the line? Just checking with my my producer. No? Okay, we're clear for about another 6 minutes. Let's see if we can bring this all together. My guest tonight has been L.A. Marzulli. He's the author of Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, and also the Alien Interviews. And there is a special right now, 2-for-1, $10 if you want to go to lamarzulli.net, order that up. It helps him keep the lights on and keep the research going, and we want to keep the bright minds, the ones that rise above the rhetoric and the standard message of deception, and try to keep us on the right track. We greatly appreciate the work that you're doing out there, L.A., and I, for one, have thoroughly enjoyed reading your book. I have Post-it notes sticking all out of it. I printed out the e-book. It's about 140-something pages, but you really want the electronic version if you can get it, because there are about 75 hyperlinks in it that just take you everywhere. I mean, you could spend 2 weeks schooling up on this stuff and really get the straight scoop on what's going on out there in the subject of, shall we call it, ufology.
Yeah, it really is sort of a cutting-edge book, The Alien Interviews, in the sense that it is interactive. When the person gets it, it's right on his computer. There's all these live hyperlinks, as you pointed out, and boom, if you're talking about Dr. Jacobs, boom, you're right on his site. You can check out what's going on, link to other places. There's YouTube, which have Dr. Jacobs on them. I mean, it's just really a neat book. And it's, in my opinion, you know, it's cutting edge, because what it's doing is allowing a person, we are in the information age, to really explore. In other words, if you have a hard copy, you're just sitting there and you're turning pages and the links are there. Now you got to go copy and paste on your browser and wait. With the ebook, all the links are hot. So you're right there instantly checking stuff out, and, you know, video, YouTube stuff, people's website. It's really fun in that respect.
Well, that's why we like the PC and laptop world of radio. We call this radio. It's really voice over IP. There are radio broadcast shows out there. Some of them have 500 affiliates, but we have 20 million people a week cruising through here and listening to these archives, and That's a big audience, and it's global. It's all around the world. We get phone calls and emails from Australia, from Canada, from even Russia, Japan. We've had calls from Japan during this program. So people listen all over the world. It's a new media, and, you know, I tell people I didn't come from broadcast. I came from engineering and science and just got hooked into this, and, gosh, I've enjoyed it since 2005, and I think we're doing a good job at it, and we do it because of great guests like you, L.A., and we really appreciate you coming on the program tonight.
Oh, it's certainly been a pleasure, Brooke, and I'd love to come back on again, and I'm sure we'll be in contact with one another.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, anyway, I've got a media alert here just been handed to me. Government of Canada provides open access to UFO X-Files. That's old news. I get emails all the time from people. Let's see, what else is in here? Really, really quick. They've provided open access to 9,500 UFO files.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to research out there, but be not deceived. Make sure that you read L.A.'s book first and know what's going on, okay? L.A., do you have any events coming up in the next couple months you want our listeners to know about?
Well, I am available for speaking, and I've got some stuff that's coming up. It's dates aren't formulated yet, but that's my real passion, to speak in front of live audiences. It's just, as you know, it's just a wonderful dynamic and a mix. So I'm always available for that, and you can go on my website and you know, shoot me an email, and I'd be more than happy to come. But got a lot of radio stuff. I know Tuesday, Dr. Stan Monteith, Radio Liberty. At 3 o'clock, the Marion Pack Show, Jesse Woodrow at 6. I mean, there's just stuff all next week, and this is what I do. I research during the day, do lots of radio stuff, and try to, in my opinion, warn people of what I believe is the coming deception. So I am available to speak. Would love to come to your conference or whatever. I'm reasonable, and you know, that's kind of what's going on in my neck of the woods.
Awesome. All right, that's down for eternity, at least as long as the internet lasts. Who knows how long that they'll let us speak freely like this around the world, spreading the message. And we appreciate you coming on.
Really
have a great week, and we'll be back in touch. Well, there you have it, Earth Explorers. We greatly appreciate you being here with us tonight, especially all the phone calls. Never hesitate to call. Phone lines are always open unless we say otherwise. We'll be back next week with, I forget who I have on next week. See how exciting this show is? You just lose track of what's going on out there. Ariel Ford is coming on, the author of The Soulmate Secret. If you ever wondered about using the Law of Attraction to find the one you love, or have the one you love find you, this will be the program for you. And we will see you next week with X Squared Radio. Tune in and get squared.
Wars and rumors of wars. Famine and pestilence. Earthquakes and floods around the world. Global financial crisis. What does it all mean? Find out in a startling new book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, by best-selling author L.A. Marzulli. Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural is a hard-hitting expose of current events and how they may relate to ancient biblical prophecies. Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural explains the growing potential for nuclear war in the Middle East, the Great Deception, the so-called alien agenda, and groundbreaking new information on the return of the Nephilim and the UFO connection. Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural is available exclusively at lamarzulli.net. Plus, if you order now, you'll receive L.A. Marzulli's new ebook, The Alien Interviews, absolutely free. Don't wait. Get both of these groundbreaking books today for only $10 plus shipping and handling. Log on to lamarzulli.net.
It has been our pleasure to have you here this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we try to provide the best 3 hours of talk radio on Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours where you live, send the call letters of your local radio station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, who you are. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Be aware that every life is immensely valuable. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.